This episode, Weekend Confirmed, is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to weekendconfirmed.hover.com and enter show code WEEKENDCONFIRMED.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right. Hey, welcome everybody to Weekend Confirmed. I'm Garnet Lee, and this is a great show. But first of all, we got to give right out the gate, we got to give congratulations to producer extraordinaire Dave Del Rio, White Boy Wasted, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Who is now White Boy Engaged.
Yay!
Oh, yeah. Congrats, dude.
So we will welcome him back next week and see exactly how heavy the ball and chain around his ankle is. Does it come equipped right there?
I don't know. Maybe I think it takes a while to develop.
Right. Yeah. It's really only a trial interim basis until you actually walk down the aisle, and that is when they weld it and, you know, stitch it into your skin.
Oh. Yeah, breaking that thing off is a chore too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was like the end of Scrooge, where, you know, he thinks he's in hell and he gets that chain wrapped around him over and over. So the longer you go, the heavier the chain gets, and the longer it gets.
Nice. So let me break the mystery. At the end of the table is Jeff Mattis here.
How's it going? I cannot believe it is Thanksgiving next week.
I know.
So awesome.
What the hell?
It's awesome.
Turkey and football and video games.
That's James, of course. James Stevenson from Insomniac, who's excited about football and turkey and games.
Yeah, and sitting in Jeff Cannata's chair, which is creepy and weird. And...
No, it's awesome. You're a much more handsome version of Jeff Cannata.
No, not even close.
Jeff is off enjoying a well-earned vacation. He's out of the country someplace. I think he went to the island. He went to one of those like resort places in the islands or something.
So
he's off
away.
Enjoying beaches and sands and waves.
He's not hanging with Del Rio.
No. Ironically, yeah, right?
It's are they getting married
right?
together. Yeah.
Not in California anyway.
Or even more scary, Andrea Renee, who is also out of the country at the same time. Yes. Anyway, and then Mr. Marcus Beer, who's now looking at me and trying to make me feel uncomfortable. First time here on the Weekend Confirmed podcast, but you guys, if you're podcast listeners, have heard him many times on the invisible walls.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's nice to finally pop my cherry with you.
Podcaster. God damn it. I was going to take pop your cherry. God. You beat me to the joke that I was waiting for.
Oh, it's all right. You're young. Your time will come again.
You cannot babysit a joke like that with Marcus.
He wasn't done talking yet. I was about to.
You cannot babysit a joke like that with Marcus. He will cut you off at the ankles, man. Cut you off at the ankles.
Low hanging fruit as well. Before you get to that one, I'm going to stick that one out there as well.
A low hanging cherry.
There's a cream for that.
Nice. I knew. I was just giving him time. I knew he's got to hold on. He's gonna like rear back and like park this one. All right, we have lots of games to talk about. And we won't waste any time getting to them. There's Resident Evil 6, there's XCOM, there's Halo, Assassin's Creed we could go back to, there's Angry Birds Star Wars, there's Blops 2. Like, yeah, we've got plenty to talk about. I'm going to start, though, with XCOM, because I finally got around to XCOM, which I got to play like a little bit on my own time for fun.
All right, yeah. And, I'm excited for you.
Welcome to last month.
Hey, F off. You know what? Like, as I talked about last week, finaling a game is really tough. By the way, we finally submitted and uploaded to Apple our first iOS game. Major, major love and propers for the Feel Every Yummy guys who have made Rider Rumble an awesome game and have worked really hard to get it up to release point. So hopefully you'll be able to play that soon.
Yeah, super fun.
On your iDevice. But XCOM, so I got to play something for fun, and I was like, wow, I've been sitting here playing. And by the way, you guys all know, also congratulations are due out to Adam Sessler, who is now in charge of the games operation at Revision 3.
Yay.
Yeah, he left us behind in LA. He's returned back up north.
Yeah.
Sad.
And right back into the swing of things, if you haven't already, you should check out some of the videos he did. And he sort of encouraged me to do XCOM because it was one of the two games he was really propping up as the games that he played while he was having his work sabbatical. That and Dishonored was the other one. Loved both of them.
Two really good choices, yeah.
Right? So anyway, I get into XCOM, and of course, you know, there's a little history there because Jeff Mattis has shared that he's gotten me killed three times.
Actually, I don't think you died the first time that I rage quit, when I basically got to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm way too weak. All my top tier dudes got killed and the aliens are out teching me like crazy. So the first time I tried Iron Man, that didn't work out. But yes, you did die. subsequently twice.
So, you know, he just had it in for me. He wanted to get rid of me because I was always a support class. With my little cute little smoke grenade.
Look, you never want to get rid of your veterans. Like, if you get all your veterans wiped out and you don't have backups ready to go, you're pretty much fucked.
Yeah, it's time to start over.
Yeah.
So I dove in, and you know, based off of the we've talked about XCOM, based off of the threads, I decide, okay, I'm going right for Iron Man right off the bat. I don't
normal
know,
or classic.
What's classic? I don't remember.
Difficulty mode. Normal difficulty or
I
classic?
Think normal difficulty.
Okay. All right.
Normal difficulty, and then Iron Man, which you had to go down and turn on in a separate menu.
Okay, you don't need too much lube for normal, so.
Good. So I started off and playing. I'm like, this is cool. It's all going great. I get to about the, I mean, it's pretty good. Like, they have an excellent, you know, I'm big on, like, in-game playing tutorials. They have an excellent system of teaching you how to play the game. It, like, moves you through it nice and quickly, but it also reinforces how everything works really well. And we get in, and I get to like, the fourth mission. And, you know, we're proceeding across a pretty open city courtyard. We hit some grays over on the right-hand side. I've got Kanata deployed, like, in the middle on the right-hand side. And he gets pinned down. And who did I have sweep out to the right? See, I had Kanata there. Oh, then Dave, maybe, sweeps out to the right. And he gets up into, like, a school bus and is, like, helping cover. But then there's, like, two more grays that show up on that side. So I'm like, oh, this is really a trouble. So I have Ariel flank around to the left and just go, like, running down the middle of the street down the far left-hand side. Because I'm like, oh, okay, the grays are over here to the right. This can be no big deal. And, of course, as soon as she gets to the end of her second move, because one of the things I think that's cool, I don't know how well, we didn't actually cover the nuts and bolts of the game very well. The two-stage movement system in this game is quite clever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's very good.
The idea that you can compromise your ability to act if you want to move further, but you get to sprint, or you can move with more practiced, you know, sort of more tempered, I'm going to pay attention to where I'm going, thought out stuff, but you're like moving in a different way. That's really cool. That's very well thought out. I think that's really well done.
Yeah, though I think like you learn very quickly you should never sprint into the dark. You should never use
yeah, well,
the
I learned that. I learned
dark.
That this lesson.
Yeah. I'm about to say, like, where is this about to go? Yeah,
but actually, on that tangent, I don't know if any of you guys remember it, but do you guys remember, like, the old beer and pretzel PC games that were made by SSI? Like, Panzer, oh, God, what was the name of it? Like, all those, remember, like, oh, this is, like, mid-90s.
The old war games.
Yeah, the old war games.
Really old. The old hexagonal stuff. Yeah.
Panzer General, is that
Panzer
what it was?
General.
Yeah, Panzer General.
It was Panzer General.
Those games were so fun, and they were about the same. They were about the same sort of beer and pretzel level of strategy and tactics that this game is. So it's really cool to see that sort of mentality and methodology come back to game mechanics in modern times. Anyway, because the presentation engine's so much better. So Ariel goes running off down the street, and of course there's a gray who's like ready for her when she comes down the street, and he gets, you know, on his turn, he gets three shots, and I'm like, all right, well, she's dead. That's going to be the end of that, and he misses. And he misses, and then he hits her, but he doesn't hit her like hard enough to kill her. So I'm like, awesome. So then I have her like run out of the way. And then Jeff's in like the perfect position to come around the corner and flank the guy who had shot at her.
Yeah, clearly I was playing the meat shield class.
Dude, you were not meat shield. You were in the perfect position, like behind. So you were about like, you were left back flank off of Kanata. And it was so easy for you to like take one full move forward and be in the perfect shot to line up down the side and take that alien out. You totally took him out. And of course, there was another alien that was around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
There was, yeah, and he critted.
That was the end.
He critted Jeff.
I ended up on the wall.
So how far have you gotten? Like, how deep are you into your first playthrough? Like, what kind of tactics?
Five missions.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really far. I'm researching like my third thing, and I've gotten like two satellites up, and yeah, not that far.
Maybe. So it's still super beer and pretzel for you at this
point. It's still
point.
Super like beer and pretzel, yeah. But here's the thing is that I love that even at this point that early in the game is that playing this game creates stories like that story. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
because
yeah.
That's what's really fun about these sorts of games is that then you have these stories and it makes them much more personal. What I realized is that it makes them so much more personal when you have your friends' names in them because it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And even more ironic, you were a support class.
I know, right? What are the odds? Well, at least one in five, right?
Yeah, but without support, everything just crumbles.
That's true. So was I medpack bearing at that point?
Yeah.
No, you're carrying the water.
Oh, well, that makes a lot more sense.
Oh.
Private water boy.
You were not private water boy. Look, you did a great job. You took out the gray that challenged Ariel and allowed her to, you know, escape.
Oh, okay. So I did do something.
Oh, yeah. You totally took him out. Yeah, you dropped him.
You dropped the
him
first
like a
one.
Bad not habit.
But he didn't take care of the second one. No one on the team did.
Well, I had faded Ariel back because she was injured, and so no one could get back to a position. Well, so Kanata couldn't come around to take out that guy because if he had done so, he was going to be right in the line of sight of the two that they were fighting in the first place.
Oh, okay. I was pretty much hosed.
You were pretty much hosed.
And it was a long-distance critical shot, right?
It was a long-distance critical shot, yeah. Because he was far enough down down behind the street that even when Ariel had come down the street, he was outside her LOS. So he was still darked. But then you had moved forward because, so, you know, geographically, Ariel comes down the street. Her assailant was forward and to the left of her. You were already a little further into the field than where she stopped. So you moved forward to shoot flank shot across at him. But when you moved forward to get there, then you were far enough down that guy who was further back in the backfield was able to see you and shut. And
classic classer overextension of yourself.
Yeah, it was totally classic overextension.
So you'll learn quickly. Overwatch, key. Like putting your characters, making one move and then putting them into just a scan mode so that if anything moves, very important. Second thing you should start doing right now, since you're still early and you won't fuck up your first game, start building satellites immediately.
Really?
Like, yeah, because satellites control – satellites give you money every month.
Right, they control where you can see.
Where you can see, and they also reduce panic in countries. And they take 20 days to build, so you have to build them early in the month. And then actually you want to save them and deploy them right before the council report, because the council report, if any countries at max terror, will leave XCOM. So you want to have like your satellites. They're like your last second like saviors that you put out. And then you also generate the money the next month. Or you may want to save them a few days before, because it takes a few days to deploy them. But you get the cash for having the satellite over a country. But satellites are basically your revenue generator.
The other thing is, too, otherwise, if you don't build those things, you end up going to your world map and you scan and it just spins and spins and spins and spins.
Which isn't a bad thing. Like, you can get through your research and not have to constantly be playing missions. But missions are a lot of fun, too. It's good. You get later into the game, and some of the shit you're talking about, like, goddamn, like, you start running into, you know, aliens that take 2-3 full hits from your guys to bring down.
Yeah. Well, you really can tell that early on it's, like, not that bad back and forth. Although, like I said, the crit from the alien right away dropped Jeff, so that kind of sucked, but...
Yeah. Well, yep. I don't know what the aliens are thinking, though. They're, like, sending down their, like, janitors and stuff first. Or whatever, it's like the little one-shotter dudes. And then I don't know. I would send down my heavy hitters first.
It's like the grunts. Same thing in Halo. That's why they always got them running around.
That's true.
You got to have someone running around flailing their hands in the air, acting like helpless babies that you can shoot.
But on the same token, like, why send in your super elite? It's humans. They're easy. We'll take
couple
care of
grays,
this, no problem.
We'll be fine,
yeah. And plus, any grays that survive then rank up. So, I mean, they're doing what XCOM does. They put the rookies out, and as you get through the missions, you rank up. And I'm sure the aliens are thinking, we'll put any of our grays survive. Well, they must be useful. We'll rank them up for later.
So what you're saying is we're thwarting their plans for leveling.
Basically.
Oh, that feels bad now. I don't want to hurt the poor players.
It's a whole new meta game. Now you think about it, it's a totally different game.
It's a dog-eat-alien world.
It is probably one of my favorite games I've played this year, though.
Really?
By far, yeah.
It's really up there for me, too.
It's just like there's just so much. It's just like relaxing to play it, even though it's so tense. Like, it's just one of those games where I can just sit there for hours and play through multiple missions. And like those moments when you were like trying to clear out a building and you know, like, the big aliens are in there that carry the big weapons that can really wipe your guys out and have like the nasty alien grenades. And you're just like, oh God, oh God, oh God. And like you said, you have those moments. You talk about the stories, even if you don't put your friends' names in, like those moments when your guys are pinned down and people are like bleeding out and you're like rushing over and there's six mutants and they're all attacking and everybody's pinned and you're rushing all of your people over there and you barely get out of there and only one person is dead. And especially afterwards, you're out of med packs. Everyone's got like 3 bars of health and you have to go clear the rest of the UFO. And you're like, fuck, 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 fuck. And then you get through and no one dies. You're just like, yes.
Then you get back to base and hire like 30 other dudes because everybody else is in traction.
Yeah, I do have a lot of people who are healing up.
Well, that as is known to happen in the game. I mean, to be honest, though, I think one of the things that makes it so compelling for me is because there hasn't been like a turn-based strategy game of any worth like in a long time.
You know? And it's cool because theirs is uncompromising in the in the delivery of the tactical element of it. Like, Overwatch, very important. Opportunity fire has always been a big part of tactical war games like that, and a good movement system and great variation amongst weapons and using line of sight and using range. And so it's definitely a, you know, good mid-range beer and pretzels tactical game. Yet the presentation is like today. The presentation is today. It looks great. It has that cool cinematic follow cam that kicks in whenever you have like big moments. That's awesome.
I think what they did that was great was they made it accessible for the console player without annexing the old school PC gamer who fell in love with that franchise so many years ago.
Yeah.
So and they've got to have props for that.
And talk about a tightrope to walk. I mean, that's who would have thought they'd been able to do that? I would have surely thought that it would have fallen on one side. Like, this is either a hardcore PC strategy title or...
I know, and you guys are going to be pissed. I reversed directions and I decided to play it on 360.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, it's not a terrible decision because, like, the graphics aren't that big and important thing. Like, sure, it looks nicer on PC, but yeah. In reality, I play the game on my PC with a controller because the game was built. Like, you can totally play that game with a controller, and it's very, very simple and easy to...
I think Marcus did call you a Philistine for that.
Though. Well, no.
He's called you a Philistine for playing on a console. I called him a Philistine for playing it on PC with a mouse and keyboard.
Oh, that's right.
No, play with
that's
a controller.
That's not Philistine. That's old school. Look, no, I see your points. I did actually... I tried it with a controller because, again, you know, you have to try both. But I felt more comfortable with the mouse. But it does work well with a controller, and it's not a huge resource hog, so it doesn't need an ultra high end PC. So all round, I think it was a very smart decision on the way they handled it. And now listening to you lot blathering on about it, now it's come back into my list of games to play next week when I've got a couple of days off.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you. My pile is like yay high.
Yeah, hopefully everyone at home plays it over the weekend if you haven't played it already. And I don't know. I wonder if it'll be any like Black Friday Steam sales for it or anything like that. Like, it seems like a prime game.
Yeah,
for...
if there is. I mean, just any, you know, if anybody sees it, if you like really good sort of like sci-fi, it's just this old, great sort of like B-movie style sci-fi.
Oh, yeah, the atmosphere is still totally there in spades. Yeah, it's totally there. Though, one of the things we were talking about in the pre-show, and this is a place where we can kind of bring it up because this game isn't getting mentioned in that, is that the VGA Game mm-hmm. of the Year announcements are out.
All right.
And that's, you know, that's one of the first ones. It is November. We're going to start talking about Game of the Year stuff soon. How likely is it that a game like XCOM will get into the Game of the Year discussions anywhere? Obviously, I mean, I understand VGA, a little bit more television audience. There's a little bit of like flash and sizzle there, although I think the list is interesting, which we can talk about in a second. But what does it take for a game like XCOM to break into that level of the consciousness?
I'm shocked it didn't. Like, it has to be top 10. Like, if you put that top 10, I mean, for me, like, I even if I look at the top five like that they have, I probably put it above two of the games on that list right now. Personally, so I'm surprised it's not in the list because I think it really is probably one of the best games that I've played this year.
No, I agree, and it's in my so far in my top three for sure. I don't know where it's going to finally settle at the end of the year, but I think on an outlet to outlet basis or on a journalist to journalist basis, you're going to see a lot of people rank the game really high. I agree.
I think that on enthusiast sites, you're definitely going to see XCOM. Yeah. I mean, I think that you look at Shaq News, we're definitely going to have it there. I think that you look at like a Game Trailers, they're going to have it there. You look at a GameSpot or a Giant Bomb or any of these places, Joystick, Destructoid, Kotaku, they're all going to be talking about it. But I mean, how does it break beyond that where it gets just a little bit more in past the, like, is it just us? Is it just our internal, like, core gamer community that's so hot for it, or could it go beyond that?
I think it's been selling really well, hasn't it?
I mean, I think it was selling well for like a small sort of, I mean, and it's not necessarily a small game, but it is a smaller game in terms, it's like it's been selling well for a
relative,
PC strategy game, right?
Yeah, relative to what it is.
Well, there was a very interesting discussion around its sales when the NPDs came out, because a significant number of purchases in the hundreds of thousands were made via Steam, which is not reported over NPD. And so, in the boxed retail environment, it didn't do that great, which says to me also that it probably didn't do that great on Xbox, in which for a game that works as well as it does on Xbox is a shame.
But the plus side is that by going through Steam, they don't have the manufacturing costs, therefore they make way more money out of it, so we're more likely to see a sequel.
Oh, yeah, 2K's already said they're happy. 2K immediately said they're happy with it, that it's sold
well.
Gotta
be. Like,
and the DLC's on the way. And
especially because, like, these things always build over time, too. You hit that first boot, and they sort of hint at the game what the sequel might be, which also follows the old ones, too. Whenever you have that first one, like, that just kind of reignited the awareness of it. You start with the core, and then you slowly start to spread out. So if this one's done well, and then they can come out with a second one that's even better and do well again with the core audience, hopefully then it starts to filter outwards to people that might be interested in strategy.
And I hope it's had a knock-on effect with the old-school XCOM games as well, because they're available on GOG.com.
Yeah,
and I think it's great that if people go and just look for them, and for $5 or $10, you can get, like,
Steam
all
too.
Of them.
Yeah. I thought there was an interesting article, actually, that I think the most interesting way, and I think this is a really good way of describing it, and maybe this is how you can spread the appeal of it, was, I think it was on Kotaku, someone called it, and I could be wrong, I hope I'm not, but they were saying that XCOM is the best sports game to come out this year.
Yes, there was an article that was relating it to the
like
sports
playing Madden or something
playing,
like that. Like you have all of your, you know, you're managing your team and all that, and then you go on the mission and you have like this 60 or 40 minute mission that's very much like there's rules and you're in place and you're maneuvering. And I was like, that's a pretty good analogy. And that is kind of how I feel when I sit down and play like a dynasty of Madden or NCAA football. Like, you know, I have like all this management and then I get to go play the game and execute and then come back and continue managing the team. And I think that might be an interesting way to point it out to people, though. I don't know, maybe sports guys wouldn't want to play.
I think that this game is particularly playable because of the way they did the interface, because of the way that it like, just sort of clicks and things work. I mean, there's the alien angle, which is cool, but at the same time, you know what a gun is, you know how a gun works. There's not anything that's like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing or how I'm supposed to be using the weapons at my disposal. And it looks good and it's fun to play. I just think that for all the times that people look at, oh, video games is just Madden and Call of Duty, that this game is an example of a great game that I think people who weren't necessarily thinking of themselves as gamers, you could let them play for an hour and be like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is that this is where video games obviously mirror the movie industry. I mean, we had the discussion before the show that you've got your Transformers that are going to be blockbusters every year and everybody's going to be all happy over them. And then you get what in the UK we call the merchant ivory pictures, you know, the room with a view. And
what do you call them?
Merchant ivory. That was the production company.
Oh, merchant ivory. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay,
so,
yeah,
you know,
I forgot
like
that.
Room with a view and all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
and,
color purple.
Know, yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's basically that's what XCOM is. And I think it appeals to a certain audience and a certain demographic who are familiar with it from a long time ago, and people who can, you know, relate to it, who do appreciate strategy games and have been woefully underserved.
Well,
You know, across the board for the last decade, in my opinion. I mean, Blizzard have kind of really abandoned them, and there are a few companies.
You're not
out
feeling
there.
The StarCraft 2.
I didn't think the StarCraft 2, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the fact they split it up into three frigging games anyway. But yeah, we can talk about Blizzard perhaps later because I don't want to steal away from XCOM. I think bravo to 2K for putting it out there and, you know, managing it. I'm so glad that they've made a truck of money. And it was also smart that they didn't, you know, they put back the other sort of like the shooter version of XCOM, put that away.
The much maligned and several times rebooted and go, oh my God, what are we doing with this game version?
But then they replaced it with this one. So it's great.
Yeah, I agree. So, James, you have I saw you had the VGA list pulled up there. It's an interesting list for the VGA nominees.
Well, and they did have, and I was curious, I looked at PC Game of the Year and they had XCOM is nominated for PC Game of the Year.
Great.
Alongside Diablo, which kind of makes sense. And
Torchlight 2.
Yep, Torchlight is up there too.
Fantastic.
Can't argue that at all.
So let's just talk Game of the Year real quick. We have Assassin's Creed 3, which we can... Well, I think we're going to get into. We've all been playing
done
it.
With that, yeah.
Okay. That's going to be one of the more polarizing.
That's definitely going to be a controversial nominee because of a couple of the ones that aren't in this.
Right. So then you have Dishonored, which hands down, I agree, Dishonored should be
there.
I think
every critic in the business would be agreeing to that being there.
And I think, honestly, well, we'll talk about our favorites after this and then come back. Journey... is
another critical darling, and it's great to see it have achieved that velocity to take it above just an indie game. And I hate to say just an indie because, you know, obviously Indie Jeff here, and then obviously what we do in mobile games is indie games, and I love them, but it has somehow achieved that escape velocity to get into the major stream consciousness, which is amazing.
It's like Limbo and Braid did, and you know, there's usually one like really shining darling.
I think this is the breakthrough one. I mean, this is the one that then, you know, they did the retail pack as well. Packaged some other stuff in, and I am absolutely delighted that it's been nominated for Game of the Year ahead of so many other titles that have had 100 times the marketing budget or the production budget that have basically failed to deliver this year. Because I mean, year on year, it's been a kind of shitty year.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's been shitty, but I do think it's been I think there's been games that were you would sort of like you had them penciled in your mind as the big 9.3, 9.4 game where they've been an 8.7 or an 8.5.
We've certainly had
like a lot of games where it's kind of like, oh, I'm just a little disappointed. Like you didn't have a game that really fully delivered on those expectations of it being one of the tentpole games of the year.
So you think there were a number of them this year because we've had a number of threads in the official show threads for the show the official show threads for the show. That was brilliant.
Brought to you by the Department of Redundancy Department.
Mm. Exactly. About whether or not this has been the biggest year of degrees of disappointment for what were sold to us as majorly marketed games.
Look, I will say last year was a really strong year. The year before was a really strong year. I think the thing, the overlying theme for 2012 is it's the end of the console cycle. I mean, bear with me. I mean, I've been through several cycles of the console cycle from 8-bit to 16-bit to, you know, working all the way through.
That was your entry point for a joke, by the way, James. You missed it.
So many entry points.
That's what she said.
So little time.
But the point being that Sony and, you know, well, Microsoft in particular have done what I like to call the Nintendo We Act, which is basically throw their arms up and say, screw you, everybody. We're really not bringing anything bar Halo 4. Third party, do all the shovel work for us. Sony, after what was a banner year last year, are perhaps bringing some things that are a little less inspiring in 2012. But then you look at all the third party games that have perhaps moved out, and we are looking at BioShock and titles of its ilk that we were expecting to be devouring and, you know, having the collective circle jerk.
Yeah, no, I mean, you love your collective circle jerks. No, but no, I get your point. I do think there are some of those big titles you looked at, like, right, that are now kind of that early 2013. I think it's just also, like you said, Assassin's Creed is polarizing. It's an 85 on Metacritic. And I think Metacritic needs to die in some ways, but, you know, like the 85 and 87 is like the new 90 in some ways, especially this year.
Okay. Well, you're looking at Halo, you're looking at Assassin's Creed, and you're looking at Black Ops. Yeah, and they're all at mid-80.
Halo not in the VGA nominees for Game
of the Year. Yeah, although they did have the most nominations overall, or tied for the most nominations overall with 8.
So that's even more interesting. How does it have the most nominations in the outfit but not make the Game of the Year nomination?
Best Shooter... Master Chief's got a nomination. Yeah, there's the Mountain Dew Award, the Pedro Doritos Award, Best Game Called Halo 4 Award.
No, Best Xbox 360, Best Shooter, Best Male Performance, or Best Character for Chief, Best Female Performance for Cortana, Best Studio of the Year for 343, and a couple others.
How can you be the Best Studio of the Year for making one game, but your game is not the Game of the Year?
Well,
I should go back and look and see what Studio of the Year is besides, and see which studio. Usually that's how it goes every year.
Well, every once in a while you'll see, like at the Academy Awards, you'll see a director that doesn't get Best Director but gets Best Picture.
Okay, but not even in the nominees.
Here's interesting. Well, two of the studios that were nominated for Game of the Year, or nominated for Studio of the Year, have games in Game of the Year, and two studios that were not nominated for Game of the Year are listed in
Studio. You just broke my brain.
Studio. Yeah, I don't know how that works, because normally, that's what I normally don't get. Normally they're all side by side, and unless you have multiple games.
So we've got Journey, we've got Assassin's Creed 3.
Oh no, I'm sorry, it's 3. So it's only you're right, it's 2 of 2. Yeah.
Who are the nominees for Best Studio?
Gearbox is in there, and they were not Borderlands.
And Borderlands
not
2 also not nominated.
And then 343.
That's the huge one for me, that Borderlands 2
not
didn't
in
make the didn't make the top. This is somebody who is a Mass Effect fan, loved the second game in particular, one of my favorite games of all time. I would have swapped out Borderlands 2 for Mass Effect 3. I felt woefully underserved by it.
That's a makeable argument, I think. So you've got Mass Effect 3.
Journey. Well, the last two. So we had Assassin's Creed. We have Dishonored. We have Journey. You have Mass Effect 3, which I think is also polarizing, probably in this list along Assassin's. And you have Walking Dead, the game, which I think a lot of people I've talked to would put it all up there. Everyone that seems to play it.
About Walking Dead is it doesn't immediately hit you if you're not experienced with it as, whoa, that's a title that's mentioned in that same group. Yeah. And then if you talk to anyone who's played it, they will absolutely stand there like rock solid backing it up telling you how amazing its ability to modernize the adventure game has been.
And it's another old school genre that's come to the front. And I've got to say that, of the games listed, there are two on that list that have, got a really sort of like gripping emotional response out of me. One of them being The Walking Dead. I mean, just playing, just some of the choices you have to make from that first episode, the very first episode. And you got to remember, this is a game that was released over the course of a year, mm-hmm. and I think that's a fantastic advert for episodic gameplay. And hopefully, we will see way more games, especially the old school franchises, come back this way. But I think it's thoroughly deserved to see Walking Dead there. I'm so pleased for the guys there. I think they're great. I love that franchise.
I think it is going to be a tough list, though. It's going to be a really tough list. And keep in mind, we still have Far Cry 3 coming out this year.
And Hitman.
And Hitman, and both of which are looking pretty damn good. You're nodding your head. No, you don't like Hitman. Marcus is not down with the Hitman.
No. Look, I'll be honest with you. There's embargoes in place.
Sure.
And there are rumblings, and from what I have seen, that nobody on that list should be worried.
All right. No one on that list should be worried. All right, folks, we're going to take a little break. First bucket of this four-bucket show is in the hopper. We will come right back when we do. I don't know. We'll talk about something. We'll figure it out during this break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover provides simple, clean domain and email management tools. One of my favorite Hover features is their AI domains that come with Whois privacy. That way, your personal information isn't publicly available. Unlimited domain forwarding and advanced DNS management. Hover only suggests services or products that they feel will be helpful to your domain or email experience. Hover doesn't do hosting, but they know a few really great companies that do, so check out the hosting tab in your domain management tools. Visit Hover today at weekendconfirmed.hover.com. If you need a domain, use the offer code weekendconfirmed and get 10% off. That's weekendconfirmed.hover.com, and we thank Hover for their support. All right, a little heated discussion going on there during the break. We reached the conclusion that it would be really tough to pull Assassin's Creed 3 off of that list. Well, at least Marcus thinks it would be really bad.
This is my opinion. I'm very into the venue change. As a foreigner, I am perfectly, into learning, and experiencing the American Revolution. The fact that they have this new protagonist in Connor, what they do with the first 5 hours has got a lot of people up in arms and a lot of people upset. And I mean, for me, I played a fair amount of it before I got my review, and that first 5 hours was totally annexed from me. I didn't know about it until I plonked it in, and it's so rare to shock a journalist or whatever I pass off as. But then when I got into it and I started, I got to the Connor section, and, it was, the homestead and expanding that and the story of Connor, and you learn about his history. It's really, it really is good, and it's something that I personally am enjoying. And maybe it's because I am perhaps a more mature gamer. And I mean mature as in I am old, not as in I am more mature than you mentally. No. I'm the biggest kid.
You're making a very intelligent, a very academic sort of explanation here. But what struck me during the conversation you guys had during the break was that you said it's the most fun Assassin's Creed I've played since 2.
Oh yeah,
that's the big piece. Forget all this other like esoteric stuff and academic. It does this and it does that. It's the most fun you've had.
A lot of this contention comes down to, I think, oddly enough, 3 and 2. Are paced very, very similarly in terms of, in 2, it takes you forever to get the blades and get your, assassin's cowl and stuff. And you're either into that, lead up to that, or you're not. And I think there's a lot of the similar sort of, approach.
Because
to this.
You drop into Brotherhood and Revelations already the badass.
Yeah.
Well, I would challenge anybody at this table to turn around and tell me that, for example, the naval battles aren't a shitload of fun in Assassin's Creed 3. Just the upgrading and, just taking on the privateer missions and the trade routes. And I'm speaking as somebody who was really concerned initially about that section, because I don't like being force-fed into driving sections or whatever in any of these games. And I friggin' adore them. And I think they're great. I think the homestead stuff and the storyline, the fact you talk to people and their stories evolve as you evolve. I think the attention to detail in there and watching Boston grow up around you and seeing the different seasons, it's basically they've taken the fun of 2, put it into a new area and just really expanded on it. I liked Brotherhood, hated Revelations.
Yeah.
I really, really hated Revelations. I thought it was a horrible, horrible cashing of a game. And to win me back from that negative feeling of being so in my negative column with Assassin's Creed, and to bring me back to this is probably, this is in my top 2. It's between this and Dishonored for my game of the year. I'm right on the fence, because as I go back and play more of each of them, I'm like, I really don't know, because they both appeal to me so much.
So that's the interesting thing. And I think Dishonored is a wonderful contrast game to talk about. And I'm going to play through Assassin's Creed 3. I'm like you. I didn't really care for Revelations at all. I didn't really feel a need to finish it. I actually thought Brotherhood started to get long in the tooth at the end and then was sort of a weird short ending. But I enjoyed Brotherhood, Revelations, whatever. Like, I kind of had my fill of Ezio, and that's fine. the problem for me with 3, and I say this and I could turn around and love 3 the next time I come on the show because I'm about 5 hours in, so I'm just getting to that point where I think it's finally going to get good, is it's like a Zelda game in terms of its start. It's just so slow. And I don't – and like doing a different character at the beginning, fine. And you have your blade right away. You kill people with it right away. That's cool too. But I really thought that like – for a game that I'm really excited to go play as this character, and even if it's this guy, it's fine, and be a badass again and get back in the Assassin's Creed world, to have, you know, these missions where I'm just walking from place to place and then watching a cutscene, and then to have, you know, some cool missions that I thought were, you know, you free those first prisoners or you go into the base and you have to steal the map and you disable the cannons. Cool. But then to have, you know, stealth autofail missions and just some of the stuff that's really frustrating. And all I really want to do is get into the game and start exploring the city and start enjoying the game. And
there you're talking about a much different – what I'm hearing, I should say, sounds like an even different issue, which is that from a game design perspective in this sort of game – You want fewer fail states early in the game because you feel like you're not getting into it. Like you want to have that ability to get into the game and get swept into it before you start hitting roadblocks.
Well, there's that. And then I think it's just like the, you know, it's fun to see the city for the first time, right? As you're walking through it. But it's like just trudging around to like trudging out to this checkpoint to watch this cutscene, to trudge back to this checkpoint to watch a cutscene, and then do this one little thing. And everything is so spoon-fed. And I know it's going to be a new entry point for a lot of people. And so I know you have to kind of train people up, but it's so drawn out that it really does remind me, actually, the game that seems most similar to is Skyward Sword, which I also had a big problem with the early parts. And I'm a huge Zelda fan, and that game gets a lot better as you go. But that first 4 or 5 hours is just like, I wish you really could condense that down and really, you know, have me do missions where I go assassinate someone and learn all my skills along the way and really feel the core fantasy of the game versus, you know, some of the side stuff that isn't quite as interesting. And
sorry to interrupt. What I will say is that if you persevere and I can see your point, and you've made the point that a lot of people have about that first 5 hours. Like, why aren't I playing as Connor? Why aren't I really sort of hitting the ground running and killing stuff? I will say that the deeper you get into the game, that first 5 hours really begins to pay off with regards to the way the story goes. And I'm not going to dish any spoilers here because, I really hope people go out and enjoy it.
I think from a story perspective, it's fine. Like, I don't really have any issues with the story that is being laid out at this point. I just think from a design perspective, it's just slow. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just I'm really experienced with Assassin's Creed and that's why I want more. Maybe that's why you're getting this complaint.
You should just go play Black Ops 2, obviously. You just want some action.
But here's the interesting thing I look at Dishonored versus what I played of Assassin's Creed, and I probably played about the same amount of both games, about 5-6 hours, maybe a little bit more of Dishonored. I'm probably close. I'm 3/4 of the way, 2/3 of the way through Dishonored. And it feels like I got more of what I wanted out of Assassin's Creed 3 in the first 6 hours of Dishonored than I did out of the first 6 hours of Assassin's Creed 3. Now, that said, Assassin's Creed 3 is a much longer game. I have a long more way to go, and I'm excited to do it. But that sort of sneaking around, assassin, going about different things the way I wanted to, like, there's a lot of stuff in there that I really like and almost kind of appeal to that fantasy of being the sneaky, stealthy assassin more to me than what I've played so far of Assassin's Creed. And I, total disclaimer, long way to go. I'm going to finish Assassin's Creed 3. I'm enjoying the story very much, and I know it's going to get a lot better once things kind of open up and the world becomes
different. Style of sneaking, by the way, in Dishonored.
Totally.
You can basically bang through Assassin's Creed, go from A to B, and, you know, just straight through the non-completionist route in about 18 to 20 hours. But if you start doing all these side missions, which is, you know, and it is a case of, I mean, as somebody who has put 110 hours into Skyrim, and is, you know, and that's even before the Dawnguard expansion pack. I mean, that's because I went off and I looked and I explored in every, you know, that's what I do in my games. I like to be a completionist.
So do you find, here's one of the things about Assassin's Creed, do you find the side missions in Assassin's Creed are as satisfying as sort of the main quest missions? Because I thought that's kind of been an up and down thing. Like, they have some interesting side things, they have other interesting things, whereas with Skyfall or Fallout, where I'm the same way, I'll put 80 hours into those games and do every, you know, like, I'll go do all the side quests before I finish the main quest. Do you think that they have gotten, are the side quests that much better when I get to the open part of Assassin's Creed?
I will say that obviously there are some side quests that are a little bit lather, rinse, repeat, and a little bit sort of like, really, but everything I have done so far, and you know, a lot of them just, you know, just from doing the exploring route from the get-go, and really sort of like trying to hit every synchronization perch every time I hit a new area, and you know, looking for the chests and all the other things that you do, it does add, because every single side mission, every single character is a layer within the story. And I really can't stress enough how much fun the homestead section is when you start rescuing people or helping people out, and they move on to the homestead, and you build you start building materials, you send them off to, you know, via horse and cart or by your own boats to sell and bring back money. That to me is fantastic. And then when you have Connor interacting with the main bad guy, you know, more and more as you progress, it really does, everything clicks into place. And to me, that's just something that I haven't really felt in an Assassin's Creed game.
And the naval side missions are really, really, really fun. Like, yeah, you know, you'll start unlocking those, and you'll get that's a real easy rabbit hole to go down. And it's not just all you're on a boat and you got to blow up other boats. There's a lot of variety in there, and it's
cool.
You know, there's some on foot missions where you're.
So I think we've cemented its position on the game of the year list. It seems like we cemented it pretty firmly.
It seems like all three of you guys, I mean, that was the only, like I said, and I'm
out of this one, actually. I have not played Assassin's Creed 3.
Well, these two guys seem to, I mean, like I said, I'm not the person to pass any judgment on it at this point. I can only comment on what I have played. What I have played, I've been a little, you know, I'm ready for it to get good. Like, I'm like, come on, get good.
And if it makes you
everyone's talking, like, you guys are saying so many good things about it. I just want to get that out of the game.
If it makes you feel any better, I am sort of where you are when it sounds like you described the other games of the series. So, like, I loved 2, Brotherhood, I liked a lot. Revelations, I was kind of, like, on the downslope, kind of done with Ezio, kind of. Story-wise, I was just like, it felt a little rushed, and now I'm back into it. And I'm you know, I'm playing Connor now. Like, I'm, you know, probably 8-10 hours into the game.
So you're not that much farther along. I mean, you're already way on board.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You'll get there.
I will. I mean, I don't know when, because there's so many games, but yeah, it's in the near the top of my pile.
So without being misinterpreted, because I know that happens quite a bit on this show, I'm not saying that Black Ops 2 should be on a game of the year list. I'm going to say, though, that I don't think that if you had said to someone a couple of years ago that a Call of Duty major release for the fall wouldn't make a game of the year list or for awards for the VGAs,
Didn't last year.
Didn't last year either.
Modern Warfare 3 did not make the game of the year list.
Okay.
For the VGA,
2001. Nominees. For the VGAs.
So now this is 2 years in a row where they haven't been nominated.
And I have to say, deservedly so, with Black Ops 2. And I say that as somebody who's, you know, not very far into the campaign. I'm, you know, a couple hours in, and I actually think that this is probably the better, one of the best campaigns in a while for Black Ops or for Call of Duty. But there are some deficiencies. I think the Metacritic, where it is right now, is kind of at the sweet spot. I think it is a very good game. I don't think it's game of the year.
I don't know. What is material. The Metacritic out right
it's,
now?
It's 85.
Yeah, last I checked, it was 85.
Yeah, it was 85 this morning when I looked. It's not game of the year material. I think that of the big three shooters that have been released this holiday season or this final quarter, in order or reverse order of preference, you've got Halo 4, then you've got Black Ops 2, and more, you know, Borderlands 2. Borderlands 2 should be on that game of year list, should be on everybody's game of year list. I think the guys at Gearbox got roundly shafted. And if it doesn't win Shooter of the Year from every outlet, I'm going to go around.
Interesting.
With Mikey.
Over Halo 4?
I have had more fun with Borderlands 2. And to be fair, I am playing it on the PC, where it does look fantastic.
It looks great.
And it
looks
is
great
big and
PC.
Beautiful. But I mean, you know, we did have this discussion again that I feel that Halo personally is something that has never really reached the heights for me personally with my taste in games. And you know, Garnet, you know my background with the shooters that I've done when I was a PR person. I mean,
so Marcus, for a long time, by the way, Marcus is a reverse of what some people accuse journalists of. He's not a journalist going to PR. He's a PR person going to the dark side or the white side.
The light side.
You've come
I
to
mean,
the light.
And, you know, I mean, the last big shooter that I repped won VGA Shooter of the Year, and that was Fear.
Yep.
And before that, Ghost Recon, Rainbow Six, Delta Force Black Hawk Down, Joint Operations. I mean, I've worked on a bunch of shooters and you know, the military style games. And for me, Borderlands, I'm a big RPG fan.
Right.
And anything that's got that kind of RPG element for me is just, you know, it's balls out fun and it's, I love it.
I wanted to drill down on that a little bit because you like Borderlands more than Halo 4, and I would be on the other side of that fence, I think. But you're not a really competitive guy. You like more of single player co-op shooters, or do you like competitive too?
And this is the thing. I used to play a lot of multiplayer, a hell of a lot of multiplayer. I mean, I played multiplayer against this guy with my games, and I used to really love it. But it's, you know, I suffer from what's known as can't stand 12-year-old syndrome. And, you know, it's just one of those things that being on a PC.
Really? Because wasn't Fear multiplayer really meant for 12-year-olds?
It was so
much crazy shit talking in that game. I just remember that game had like a lot of people shit talking in it. Remember?
It was, I mean, don't forget, I launched it on the PC. And we released it. We also released it for free. We annexed it and released
like
it for
Fear
free.
Fear Warfare Combat. Or something. Like, wasn't it?
Fear Combat.
Fear Combat, yeah. I just remember people talking crazy crap in that. Anyway, I didn't mean to derail you. I apologize.
But, I mean, that's always been my biggest problem. I mean, I'm always happy to, you know, on a multiplayer game on the PC. I mean, I like, you know, Guild Wars. Guild Wars is one of my favorite games of the year. Love that one, and I love what they've done with the MMO environment. Happy to quest up with people and whatever, but I'm just so sick of the 10 to 12-year-olds who have no right being anywhere near a console, a PC, any video game device whatsoever, or out of the basement
ruins,
they should be locked in.
That ruins your Halo experience, basically.
Not your competitive Halo experience, at least.
Well, yeah, it's done that with Black Ops, it's done that with Halo, it's done that with almost any game nowadays that has a multiplayer component that involves shooting. I mean, you know, that's just, unfortunately, the state of gaming as somebody who is a middle-aged gamer.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think, you know, hopefully, eventually people grow up, or, you know, it's easier to play with people you want to play with.
Or you can age gate your friends list. That'd be pretty awesome.
Or parents actually start doing their job.
Yeah, that too. I really like Halo 4 a lot. Like, it's probably my favorite shooter of the year. I have not played Blops at all. And I'm not even through Halo 4 yet. But, I mean, just the, like, when you, I especially think, like, you know, the stunning thing to me is how weird it is to play a Halo game that feels like a Halo game.
You're totally Las Vegas menu, Las Vegas buffeting the games right now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. It's a total Las Vegas buffet. Although, I just got it last week.
I'll take a helping of this. I'm going to go do a helping of that.
Yeah, well, you know, I was up seeing some family in Seattle, so I had dinner with David Ellis last week, and he gave me my copy of the game. And so I finally got it to start Monday, and I played already like 4 or 5 hours this week. And, you know, it's amazing, weird feeling that. Like, wow, this feels like the other Halo games do.
It does definitely feel like Halo.
It's a completely different group of people making it, which is kind of cool. But then I think the thing that really took it to a different level, like, it feels, okay, yeah, very familiar. When you start fighting the Prometheans, I mean, I don't know. Have you guys played Halo 4 yet?
I've finished it, yeah.
I haven't gotten to it.
Okay. So yeah. I'm really talking to Garnet here. And when you start fighting the Prometheans, like, it totally changes. Like, there's all these kind of built-in muscle memory of how you play Halo and how you fight the Covenant and how you fight the Flood. And now you have this whole new class that's very different. And fighting them alone, it's kind of like this cool, weird learning curve and new weapons that come along with that. And then fighting them in combination while fighting the Covenant, just some really, really cool stuff that I'm kind of stoked on. And like I said, I'm kind of a Halo geek over the years, and it's fun to see kind of the story and the narrative become.
Well,
a really
I mean, that's
big part
one
of
the distinct advantages. We were talking there earlier about where Black Ops 2 and Modern Warfare 3 last year might fit into this stuff. And they seem to be two games that have really been able, the only two games, I guess, that have been able to carve themselves out that equivalent to the summer blockbuster movie that has been talked about in video games for like the past 10 years. Oh, we'll have summer blockbuster games. And those have sort of not hit, but the Call of Duty line, you know, Modern Warfare and Black Ops has become that game. It will sell like crazy at retail. It will be a like popular social societal thing. Everyone and their brother knows somebody who's playing Black Ops.
It's a chat room at night, you know?
Exactly.
Well, Halo, to be fair, Halo is one of those. I mean,
Halo 4 is close to that.
Halo
stature.
It busts the record for the, you know, largest day
here's
one entertainment thing.
I know,
last
and
week.
Here's the thing that's interesting to me is that, and maybe this is anecdotal perception leading me wrong, Halo 4 might even eclipse Modern Warfare, I mean Black Ops 2, in raw sales numbers, but in societal impact, in like the perception of games to the general media, it still seems to be set off as that's a video game, whereas Black Ops and Modern Warfare get set off as, oh, that's that crazy cinematic like thing that everybody plays, right?
Well, I think that's the problem with the mainstream media.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that at all.
And as somebody who covers games for NBC here in Los Angeles, where I have my own monthly segment, it's all, I mean, you know, I work with some really great people, but it is an uphill battle.
Oh yeah, segment producers there, I'm sure they want like they want the stuff that they've heard.
Yeah, they're more than happy. I mean, and it's funny, they're more than happy to send people off to the Call of Duty midnight opening, but not necessarily to the Halo or the Assassin's Creed.
Great example.
Or, you know, the Wii
That's
U
the
launch.
Point.
And it's not really...
What midnight Wii U launch?
They were going to be all over LA on Saturday night.
Not at GameStop.
Really?
GameStop is not doing midnight launches for Wii U.
I wonder if they didn't get any of the holdbacks, because, you know, Nintendo did announce that if... By the way, if you're interested in a Wii U, major retailers are supposed to have walk-in allocations set aside so that if you wanted to, you could go to
That's for the staff to buy and sell on eBay.
That's usually not allowed, actually. But
It's never allowed, but, I mean, are you telling me it doesn't happen?
It depends on the store management, but it shouldn't. Like, I mean, in theory, you have them roped
there's
off.
There's a lot of things that shouldn't happen. Honey Boo Boo shouldn't have her own TV show.
Hey, she brings ratings. That shouldn't. I mean, she shouldn't, but you're right.
No, where I was going with the comparison, because
derailed.
What James had introduced was this idea of how great the AI and sandbox combat is inside Halo. And it is. I agree. And it does have a lot of cool, that overused word, emergent gameplay. It does have a lot of gameplay that's not exactly as emergent as, like, you're finding new ways to do things inside the game. But each game will have its little stories that it tells, somewhat like XCOM. Oh, I had to flank left here. I used this gun. I took out these guys. All that sort of thing.
Oh, my God. My shield was gone. And I, like, was out of ammo. And I just scooped up a weapon off the ground and pulled off the killer shot. Like,
and now this is really getting into some crazy esoteric, like, ramblings. Maybe that is also one of its difficulties for the public to relate to, because much like a deeper, more thoughtful film experience, you have to be engaged. You have to be more into it, right? Whereas Black Ops 2, I haven't played it. You played it, Marcus, but like our reviewer, I spent some time chatting with him about it, and like it sounds like it's showing its age for one thing.
I would agree with that,
and that it just
the engine is showing its age.
The engine is showing its age, and as a function of that. The you have no open environments where people are moving. The enemies are the AI is very straightforward and simple, which makes it very easy for you as a player to move through and use your guns and feel like a Rambo because you're, oh man, I just popped that guy, now I advance and I pop that guy and I pop that guy and I hop in a plane. And so it has that linear rhythmic progression beat taking you through the game. And you can't guarantee that in Halo, because in Halo, again, back to James's point, it's like every time you get into those mixes, different things happen, and there are sections that are going to be tough.
But let me throw out there that people buy Halo for multiplayer and single player. People
yes, they
buy
do.
Black Ops and Call of Duty now for multiplayer.
That's
I mean,
true.
Let's face it, they've kind of given up on the single player over the last
couple
of years.
Although the single player in Black Ops 2 is supposed to be pretty clever.
Well, let me say that this episode...
They market that damn game with the single player campaign.
This one particular iteration, I think, is one of the stronger ones because some of the decisions that Treyarch have made with the different storyline paths you can take, there are some levels, even early on, the Afghanistan level, where it is more wide open, which, pushes the engine. But, I mean, being on a horse running around killing people before you get to your objective is there's no great worry about it, and you still got helicopters and everything coming in that you can pick up weapons and just go and blow shit up with. That I think is very cool. The problem for me with Black Ops 2 is the
Strike Force. I knew you were gonna say it. I could see it in your eyes.
Yeah. And because I'm getting into the storyline, I've done a couple of past missions, I've done a couple of future missions, and bam, I'm into this really rubbish.
How did they cock
defense.
It up so bad?
Look, the tutorial's awful.
Okay.
You can't.
Maybe you should explain. So you should explain the Strike Force missions so that people listening know what you're talking about.
So the Strike Force missions are basically a command and conquer light, if you will, top down. You're the general position, and then you have three sections to defend, and you have three squads and to start off with, who you have to allocate to different sections. Turrets and foot soldiers and like mini mechs, and then. You have 10 minutes to defend them, and you can drop down into any one of those groups and take control and fight it for yourself. The problem is it's really clunky. AI is about as smart as a bag of hammers. it just feels so shoehorned in. And I mean, I've, you know, sort of like explained this elsewhere as my own personal theory that, you know, Bobby Kotick's beta testing where he wants to take, you know, the third leg of the Call of Duty franchise. So you'll have Modern Warfare, you'll have Blackout, you'll have Black Ops. And then, oh, guess what? We're going to have our own Tower Defense Command and Conquer style game called, you know, whatever we're going to call it. Call of Duty Strike Force. Ideally, I mean, for me, it would have been better had they treated it like Spec Ops and made it its own annex section so you can go off and try. Because it pulled me out of a storyline I was really beginning to enjoy and just, you know, enjoying the cheese of it and, you know, galloping on horseback, firing, you know, a great big anti-tank missile and, the insanity of it. That was actually really quite fun. And then, boom, I hit this brick wall.
Okay, there's a great deal of irony in saying that you were so drawn into the crazy, cheesy Black Ops storyline that you didn't want to be broken out of it to play game mechanic.
Well, I mean, I switched off and I was enjoying it. Cool. I mean,
Transformers moment. You were just like, people only buy it for multiplayer. But then you're like, oh, yeah, it's fucking awesome because I'm like a badass. And it's like, that's what they market most of the game with. Most of the TV commercials, but, these single-player moments.
My point being is that I'm not the target market to buy Black Ops for the multiplayer because, I mean, going back to what I said about not playing multiplayer a huge amount, but how many people get online and how many records will Black Ops break just on game time alone on Xbox 360 over the next month? It is, you know, that franchise has surpassed Halo as the number one multiplayer experience that people do know about and they do get on and they have their kill streaks. Although what I'm hearing about the multiplayer, and I haven't explored it, but I'm hearing that there are some people who have issues with it this time around.
Isn't that true of every Call of Duty? Like every single one where they've changed it every single time, there's like a group, oh, I'm staying with Call of Duty 4, and then the next group, I'm going to stay with Black Ops 1, oh, I'm going to stay with Modern Warfare 2. And
I just want to know what the next series that will be that will inject tower defense mechanic in with where it is totally not wanted like Assassin's Creed did. And
I'm going to go with the new Mass Effect, which when we come back on the other side of this break, we can dive into that. And some other speculative stuff. Marcus and I want to talk about Bond because we both saw Skyfall and love it, and we miss good Bond games.
And
so we've
Bond is terrible. The new Skyfall. Well, it's not terrible, but you know.
Are you insulting my country, sir? I would challenge you
to
a duel.
It's not terrible. I actually like it, but we'll discuss my complaints.
All right, stick around. We'll be back for the second half of Weekend Confirmed when we continue. Right. Can never go wrong, really, with a little David Bowie.
That's true.
Never go wrong with a little David Bowie. All right. As promised, I want to talk a little bit about this development around the announcement or the reveal of the next Mass Effect being in development in Montreal. And no, Montreal, yes, it's in Canada, but it's not the same place as Edmonton. So, yes, it is not at the BioWare home base. It's at BioWare Montreal. You're might not be familiar with them because they haven't made a game before. Now, I'm not really casting as strong an aspersion as it sounds. They've worked on quite a bit of material that has been in Mass Effect 2 and 3. They worked on cinematics and seven missions for Mass Effect 2. They worked on the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. They worked on a large piece of the upcoming Omega DLC for Mass Effect 3.
Did they write the endings of Mass Effect 3? If they didn't, they're okay by me.
Hey-o!
I think that's been a going to be fun. Like that's a new team, but you know sometimes you want to get some fresh blood on that. They built that team from the ground up, I think, really to potentially be around to take over too.
So I'm curious. So that's why the reason I wanted to throw this open is I am not at all opposed to other sorts of games in the Mass Effect universe because they have a really cool universe. I am though curious how people respond to it. Number one. And number two, whether this is thought of as a new. So look, as we were talking about with Halo 4, Halo 4 came back and it felt like a Halo game, right? Is this going to be now Mass Effect 4 that's going to come back and be a Mass Effect 4 and try to be a Mass Effect, or is it going to do something different? Casey Hudson, who was the executive producer on 2 and 3, is staying on as the executive producer on this product. And I'm just not sure where they're going with it. They're going to a new engine. They're going to the internal EA engine, the Frostbite 2 engine, which that doesn't necessarily mean anything because it's obviously very versatile as well, just like the Unreal Engine has proven to be. You know, Frostbite 2 is in everything from Command & Conquer's upcoming game to a Battlefield game. It's also, though, the backbone to Dragon Age, which was another of the BioWare games that became progressively more action-oriented. We saw the action-oriented...
The words you're looking for is progressively worse.
Both.
Yeah. And then, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but the studio director there at BioWare Montreal, whose name is Yannick Roy, said, "We're exploring new directions both on the gameplay and story fronts." Okay, that sort of pricks my ears up in the first place. But then he goes on to describe the pillars of the franchise. Here are the pillars of the franchise in Roy's opinion. Diverse alien races, a huge galaxy to explore, and of course, rich cinematic storytelling.
Sounds like a tower defense game.
Not in there is character development and role-playing.
Well, story implies character
development. Does it? I don't think so. It? No, not at all. There's story in Black Ops 2.
Well, there's story in Uncharted 2, and there's no real...
Well, let me go back to the Montreal thing. I mean, first of all, Montreal does have a metric shit ton of really good developers around.
I agree. Along with a metric shit ton of really good poutine.
Oh, yes, you got to love the poutine. And in fact, some of the most beautiful women around are actually up there. I've been up there and I've seen that they're gorgeous.
Just because they speak French does not
poutine
make them.
Poutine and poutine?
Hang on. Where am I from? Do you think the French accent is going to do anything for me?
Yeah. You like it because it's wrong.
No, I actually prefer American accents, actually, as my girlfriend will testify. Hello, sweetie. I think Montreal, the new team, if they've cherry picked and really got some good people together,
which they probably had they probably had a pick of many folks that they wanted. Mm-hmm.
Great, but the Frostbite engine, again, it's a tasty looking engine.
Definitely,
I think that they could do much worse. Because let's face it, the engine was chugging a little bit at the end of the last Mass Effect game, and Dragon Age 2 was not really all it,
And granted, the reason Unreal Engine was chugging under Mass Effect was that they had a number of tools that they had built around earlier versions of Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine has advanced significantly from the point at which they started building the Mass Effect tree. Yeah. So,
and it makes cost-effective sense for them to use the in-house engine.
Of course.
With regards to the story pillars, look, Mass Effect is something that is very dear to my heart. Mass Effect 2, as I said earlier, is one of my favorite games of all time. It's one of the few games that I completed all the way through and then went back and replayed from, the Paragon angle just to get, just to get the different exits. I think that they will... They can come at it from so many angles. Like I said, I think you could have, the space exploration is huge. It can be a prequel. I personally hope that it's not a prequel. I hope it takes place after the end of Mass Effect 3 and we get to see the after effects of everything that's gone on and the rebuilding of that solar system. Dare I even issue the thought that, this might be something where they're pushing towards massively multiplayer because that's something
I don't know. EA might be very gun shy of that after Star Wars.
Well, after Star Wars. I mean, and you're right. This is EA. They don't really know their asshole from their elbow right now. They make missteps every single way they go. Would I like to see a Mass Effect MMO? I think that would be phenomenal. That's something I would plonk down $15 for.
Now, what would separate that for you from other attempts in that space, and especially let's talk about Star Wars. Aren't you a Star Wars fan?
I am a Star Wars fan. I've got my old Republic account, and I played it for a fair while, and now I'm going back to it because it's free to play. And I think that's going to be an interesting test. I mean, they were certainly very ambitious with what they did, and I really liked the old Republic, and I think it got kind of gypped by the way it came out. After all the big awards last year, because I think it should have been up there for BioWare game that was also MMO.
Yeah, and I think half the problem with the awards last year was no one had really had a chance to play it. Came out, what, like the 18th or something right before Christmas?
Came out right over Christmas. It was crazy
no one had played it, and then, it's a you know, it's a 150-hour game to go through one storyline. I agree with you. I thought Old Republic was excellent.
And yet it didn't stop Zelda getting nominations.
Well.
What did you, I don't know. What do you think? Wait, what you were humming and stroking your chin. Did you think there was something going on there?
I think that there are way too many Zelda fanboys in the games industry.
Shh, 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 shh. Okay. I think that's... Why? Why are you shushing? Why are you shushing?
Because Zelda's great. And
Zelda is great, but he's probably not wrong that there are a hell of a lot of Zelda fanboys.
There's not too many, though.
I think Zelda does get cut a lot, way more slack than it deserves. And I think Skyward Sword's critical success, where it was a critical darling with a lot of people, certainly showed that.
Did you get past the first 5 hours?
No, I put it back in the corner and went back to sleep.
See, again, I agree with you. It's almost Assassin's Creed, and I compared it to that. But first 5 hours is just like it's a grind.
It was also,
like you're
it was
trying
also painful
to
look at. I mean, I was playing it on 120p or whatever the Wii was on.
You're a PC guy over here. Where's your Dolphin setup?
Seriously,
we're on that in 1080p, son.
I'm not gonna connect my Wii to my PC. My PC is sacrosanct.
No, you don't have to connect it at all. You just have to download the emulator, put your disc in.
Dolphin emulator.
Screw that. I'm not putting any Wii discs in my PC. Thank you. My PC is a state-of-the-art Alienware rig, and it is not being besmirched. But I mean, look, I've had an issue with Nintendo for a lot of their shovelware for a long time.
Just call Skyward Sword shovelware?
No. In general towards Nintendo. I wasn't calling it shovelware. I just think that
I'm gonna cut you.
Where's my riot shield?
Let's do this. Let's go down. Come on, Nintendo. I love Nintendo.
Well, good for you.
You're being mean.
Well, dude, you're talking to the guy. You're talking to the guy who over the summer went back and bought his third Super Nintendo and plugged it into my system back home and bought Pilot Wings and Super Star Wars.
Were you bitching about
Shadowrun?
Were you sitting there the whole time going, man, this thing looks so bad.
Actually, I was like, you know what? This is way more fun than Skyward Sword.
Well, so I guess the graphics didn't bother you that much that time.
That's the thing. I didn't have a problem with the graphics there, but I mean, I'm expecting in a console. I mean, it just looked
so.
You're
excited about a Wii U 3D Zelda that could be in HD. Then,
honestly, if they bring a really good new Zelda that looks good, I'm actually hoping for a new Mario Galaxy for the Wii U. That's what I'd like to see. And obviously, we've gone off the Mass Effect, so I'm going to pull us back on tangent.
Yeah, let's come back to Nintendo, especially Wii U launching on Sunday.
Mario Hat.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of space you can go.
That's also mean. You're both mean.
I'm gonna
that character's so creepy.
If they go back to Mass Effect 2 and that balance of the RPG and the action, which I think was the good balance before, you know, the
Yeah, I agree with you.
Really
no, I agree with you. I really liked the balance in 2.
And I think if they can go back to that and then say, you know what, this is what we've got and it's moving to, you know, and it probably will be a next-gen game.
So do you think I'm too much of a fucking cynic to look at that and think that they're instead pushing even further like they did with 3?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, dear. I would hope that, you know, the gamer, you know, the sort of like the naive, hopeful gamer inside of me wants them to go off and say, this is going to be more like Mass Effect 2. The cynic in me who knows what a rat bastard Frank Gibeau is, you know, is half expecting Mass Effect 4 to be, you can only play it if you log into Facebook 863 million times, tweet every single action you do while Instagramming it and Foursquare checking in on every space station.
That was a good rant.
That was actually a very good
this
rant.
This is why we fucking brought him on the show, right?
Yeah. Score one for beer.
Yeah, no shit. So 2 points real quick, because I want to come back to where you said Mass Effect going to a different place. First, Manvir Hair works in that game. Friend of mine, Indian, and he knows I'll kick him in the balls if he fucks it up. Secondly, I don't know that Mass Effect, where you talked about Halo, where Halo has like such a way it is, that, you know, Halo 4 couldn't deviate from that. If it does, it's no longer Halo. And I know there was a lot of consternation in the reviews where people were like, well, you know, they played it too safe, but it feels exactly like Halo. But, you know, there was all these sort of comments. And I thought that was one of the credits. That game nailed it and then did some cool new things, too. Mass Effect doesn't have that same problem going for it because ME1, ME2, and ME3 are all very different in a lot of ways. Like, they're similar, but especially ME1 to ME2.
ME1 to ME2, definitely.
Yeah, like, game is very different. And ME3 continues to evolve that. I don't know where they're going to evolve down the line. And even look at Dragon Age 1 to Dragon Age 2, and you had the same thing where
big
changes.
DAO, I mean, yeah, they've changed it completely.
I have to think, and I would hope, and again, I could be totally wrong, I don't know. But I would have to think, you know, they would hope to still be going after that core audience a little bit and trying to keep them, you know, engaged. But who knows? Maybe it will be more.
Well, so my question is...
But my point is, I guess, that I don't think it has that same... You know, they can evolve that game.
So
it
you
can
want...
be different than MU1, 2, or 3 because all three of those games are not like each other. There's not... You don't have to have this exact same sort of gameplay because they've all felt different in their own ways.
My questions then are two-part. How do you feel about where it should go? Should it go in a... Do you still want more of the Reavers and the stories around that ancient technology, or would you like to just see something that takes place in the universe, a la Star Wars 1313, which is, you know, hey, here's this huge universe.
If that ever comes out.
We have a ton of canon. We know how this world operates. We know all these races. We could go do a completely different story in it, or do you want to see more of what you've been already talking about and playing with? And then you've, I think, already sort of answered the other part about, like, where do you want the mechanics to go? Do you want more of Mass Effect, or do you want to take a break from that and do something different in the Mass Effect world in both ways?
I don't think I need Mass Effect 4, quote-unquote.
Like, okay.
I don't think I necessarily need it to be the direct continuation.
Because they did close off Shepard's story.
Right,
It can be a couple of hundred years down the road. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, Mass Effect the next day. But I just don't like this whole... this thing where everybody's got a fascination with prequels.
Well, the thing,
like, oh, look, it's a baby Reaver, and then he's going to turn up, grow up to be Darth Vader. And
maybe he was a nice Reaver when he was young, and then something terrible happened to him.
And they made him play Zelda Skyward Sword. I'm going to take your pencil away now.
They made him ingest the code for Skyward Sword. He's like, oh my God, this code, get it out of my ship!
But no, that's where I'd like... I mean, I think the prospect of, you know, every civilization rebuilding after being cut off. And sorry, spoiler alert for an eight-month-old game. I mean, come on, get on YouTube, people.
So how would you feel about a game that, like, focused – it was a prequel but focused on, say, here is the story of Thane. You know, like, you're playing as Thane. It's all events that predate – or any of the – your.
Did you ever play Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero?
No.
Did you ever watch Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
Yes.
That was actually a good movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was, except for James Franco.
Well, always. No, I see what you're saying. Although I kind of feel like, I mean, I guess my assumption is they'll want to ground it so that it feels familiar in some way, like
right. Maybe
with Thane or someone. But, you know, they could totally just go do something new. I mean, I don't know what, it's so interesting. Like, what are their goals? Like, they really have, like, the entire universe to play with. They could
Absolutely.
Take it in so many different directions. They could go prequel. They could go way in the future. They could go more military based. They could go more kind of side story based. They could go big save the galaxy. They could go save a planet. Who knows?
I would like to see a couple of years, whether it be 100 years or whatever, and after all the relays are destroyed, then people say, you know, obviously there's going to be less and less contact between all the different races because all that tech is gone. And then rediscovering each other. That, to me, would be very interesting, whether it be repairing the relays or whatever. But, you know, the races rediscovering each other and perhaps new integrations on how it works and whoever the big bad is.
Fascinating political story as well there, as you know, some of the races who felt like they were maybe, you know, overwritten by humanity. That was one of the big issues on the Citadel was, you know, how did the humans come on the Citadel and suddenly gain such prominence? And, you know, we were deserved of much more of a space at the table than they were. All those sorts of rivalries could come into play. Be very interesting. It would be very interesting. And you know, it's like a reboot of a First Contact situation. So
I would love to play as an alien race, though. I mean, rather than your stereotypical, here's a human.
See,
I'd love to think.
I wonder if it'll be more like multiplayer, like, you know, customize your own new hero and, like, it could be different races. And I wonder if that's kind of the route they would take, you know, where it's like you said, you'd be able to choose and, you know, you wouldn't just have to be a human anymore. Maybe there's different ways.
Torian Shepherd.
Yeah, your own character, your own race, you can, and then how the game interacts with you, it's replayable through that because the different races might see you differently.
They did that with Dragon Age. The very first Dragon Age came out that was the better of the two. I mean, you had the different choices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got a track record for doing that, so that might be...
But Dragon Age also, you know, going back to when they were showing that game, and they're like, we've been working on this game already for 3 years, because it took so much work to do all of the storyline stuff behind the scenes that it was another Star Wars killer, because there's so much dialogue and so much dialogue branching and in building a system around that. The labor intensive side of building out all those dialogue trees and making all of those logic options work makes it a very big project to tackle.
Are you saying that they haven't been working on Mass Effect 4 for 2 years?
No,
because those guys, the Mass Effect 3, or Montreal is working on 3.
Well, pieces of it.
Yeah, but they probably, I'm sure there's been...
Have they been pre-producing it for a while? Yes, yeah. But have they been working on it in earnest? Not until probably, you know, who knows? It's like Min Manver went over there, I guess.
No, he was there for 3. He's been there for a couple of years. Yeah, he was there for 3. He was working on 3.
Okay. All right, so...
Call him up.
I call him up. Call him and say, hey, right now. We're talking about your game right now. What can you tell us? So I think there's a lot. I'm curious to see also what those of you out there, listeners, are interested in. Mass Effect has had a really strong effect on people.
And no, I think, pun intended.
No effect. Yeah, exactly. And I think that also that's part of the reason why people were so upset both with the continuing changes in the game mechanics from 1 to 2 and less or so, but also from 2 to 3. And then also you couldn't put an ending on it to satisfy people. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't bollocks the ending, because they did completely botch
that. But
even
if they did the best possible ending, it still would have pissed some people
right.
off.
Right. Exactly.
Well, they didn't do what they've said they were going to do all along. And when you've invested 80, 90, 110, whatever hours it is across 3 games, and you expect an ending that reflects all the choices that you've made, which is what they put on the box. This is the big finale. This is where your story comes to an end, and they can't deliver. Somebody needs their testicles removed with a rusty spoon.
Ouch. It's cold-blooded.
Hey, I fucking loved Mass Effect 2. I thought that they evolved it from the first one, and then the third one came along, and it was an insipid devolution, in my opinion.
Well,
primarily because of the story, right?
The story, yeah. The story, and oh, look, we have to do the multiplayer and get your galactic readiness up. Yeah, and it's like, you know what? I don't know.
Not a big fan of that either.
Yeah.
Well, Montreal worked on the multiplayer, so.
Oh, we know it's going to be multiplayer. Everything's going to be multiplayer. And what will be more interesting is will EA be around by the time it's ready to ship?
Oh, come on. Well, what do you mean, will EA be around by then?
Well, Medal of Honor Warfighter. And, I mean, let's face it, they've had a bad year.
They're not going to make any more Warfighters. But they've also had the brilliant successes of FIFA outdoing itself again.
Need for Speed.
Need for Speed has done very well. Good. Madden had a for sales. Madden had a banner year.
And
again.
They have a pretty big. They have a pretty big fourth quarter with Crisis and Army of Two and Dead Space 3 and Fuse. Yeah, they have a pretty good.
Well, let's see how Dead Space 3 is received now that it's got leveraged in co-op.
Leveraged in co-op. I was not actually going to go to Resident Evil next. We're going to talk about Resident Evil probably a lot more next week when Ariel's on, because she and I have been playing it, and I played a lot of Resident Evil 6. We finished Leon's, and now we're doing Jake's campaign. We'll probably finish the game hopefully by next week. Maybe we'll play it over the weekend.
What's your preview? What's a preview of your? Because I started Jake's campaign with a friend a week or two ago. We've played is like 3-4
How did you decide to start on Jake's?
I don't know. We were looking at it. We're both Resident Evil fans. We played through 5 together, and we were like, let's try the new guy first. And so we decided to try the new guy's campaign first.
Uh-huh.
And
can you stop making fun of Sherry Birkin? Oh, Jake!
No. But, no, we made fun of that a lot. But here's the interesting thing, and like I said, I want to hear your preview, but I'll say mine first. It's not Resident Evil, but it's not bad. Like, at least what I played, and again, I'm super sliced. Like you said,
I'll go past. It's not bad.
Side
it's fun.
It is fun.
It's also fun because we're playing at co-op. And so, actually, the question that Hockey Johnston posed in last week's show thread is Resident Evil just not a single player game anymore? This seems like the second release in a row where you'd really want to play at co-op to get the best experience. And I can't disagree with that at all.
Yep.
I cannot disagree with that in the least.
Which is frustrating because I want fucking Resident Evil 4 2 is well, what I want.
That's the
what
thing
I,
all of us fans,
really,
all the fans
really
want a Resident Evil game.
I want Resident Evil 1 and 2.
I want Resident Evil
that's
2 and
the,
Veronica.
Yeah, those are the ones I want back.
Veronica was great too, and I love 2. I agree with you, or the remake of 1 for the GameCube is fantastic.
Well, I would go ahead and say, you know what, reboot the bloody franchise. Start it from scratch because it's all over the place.
I'm in.
With so many different versions, Code Veronica, Operation Raccoon City, Mercenaries, Spank the Monkey, whatever they've got all these different versions, toss them all out, reboot it with an umbrella, go back to that house with a new engine, Give us back the creeps. Give us back the that sense of
go back to the house. Boating.
Make, make it
to the
a survival house, horror game again, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like
here's does a survival horror game work now?
Yeah, yes. it does.
It could work even better than ever.
But in co-op, it's I don't think anybody's really pulled it off correctly.
Well, I think it's really hard to pull it off in co-op when you're sitting there making dick jokes with your friend the whole game.
That's
why I mean, it's just like you're not when you're scared in the dark alone with a flashlight. Like, you know, like that's one thing. When you're scared in the dark alone with a flashlight and a friend and you feel like you're going through a haunted house together,
and
it's
that ties into the whole thing about survival horror. When you introduce guns, the amount of tension immediately ratchets down significantly.
I mean, there were guns in the first one, but it was the ammo. It was always
it was
about
resource management.
It wasn't just the ammo. It was the shitty mechanics of the time where you had to turn slowly.
Now, I have
like
wondered
a
about
tank
this. I have wondered about this. There's been good articles written about whether or not the necessity of the mechanics being bad like they were was part of what made those games work. That and the camera angling, because keep in mind the sort of detailed 3D environments they were doing, they had to have like that weird fixed camera,
right,
like
because everything
security
was pre-rendered and you were just running around outside of it, and that's what made this.
And so you got tense when you were just like, shit, get off of that, you're stuck on the
I mean, you did, but I mean, you can imagine now going and rebooting that where you've improved the control system, where you're not making it Gears of friggin' War.
Well, I think that's Resident Evil 4, honestly.
But like, I just want to argue the co-op thing. And if you want to put the co-op in, I actually think that if you are smart about co-op and you have people playing together but not necessarily on the same screen at the same time, where, for example, Garnet, you know, we're going to play a co-op game and you start off in one corner of a house or a level or whatever, and I start off in the other. We've got to find our way to each other.
We're on the same
way. To me,
even if we're sitting in the same room or talking over live, it would be like, holy shit, where are you? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Where are you? Well, especially shit, like that kind of, that would be tense.
Especially talking over live, being in the same room is always, that's always tough with a split screen. But I think
we have two TVs next to each other, so it's kind of
just
kind of cool.
He's
not posh, it's just like cool.
But I mean, this is the point that, you know, if you're not, you know, seeing somebody else, you're just hearing their headset, then you build that in as a part of the game. You're just getting the messages.
But part and parcel to this conversation is that with 5 and 6, Resident Evil started off being produced in a different direction. They wanted to make it a action game with a Resident Evil atmosphere to it. Yep. So they used the Resident Evil, you know, canon to do bioweapons, to do the sort of settings that they put you into, and the weird, goofy backstories for everything that's going on. And but then it is a pure action game. And so you are with your partner. You are gunning down people.
Well, it's not even like a straight up shooter, because you know it's not like you just get in cover. The game encourages you
designed
to run out and punch guys and take guys down with your fists in the end.
The melee is so overpowered.
I mean, that's actually design of the game. Like, they don't want you to sit back and just pop things. They want you to get in there and feel like it's an action
and
movie.
And
I think their combat design is a lot better in those games than people give them credit
for. This reminds me why I want a zombie parkour game. Where you don't have a gun. So Mirror's Edge meets Resident Evil. So your whole goal is like, oh my God, I got to get the fuck out of here and get to whatever my next objective is.
Don't you think a zombie parkour game would be more fun if you did have a gun, though, and you were like doing crazy moves and shooting things?
Maybe, but it anytime from Dead Space to any of these games that would be legitimately more scary if you take the gun out of my hand. I mean, I just think about how tense Amnesia was, right? Amnesia the Dark Descent. No weapons. Everything is like, you see an enemy, you're like, I'm hiding in the corner. You know, you've got an insanity mechanic. It's all this crazy stuff that makes you feel, the minute you put a gun in a player's hand, he feels empowered. And the scares become less about like, oh my God, that thing's going to kill me. It's like, okay, where's the next thing I have to shoot? And there's no, it just ratchets down the level of tension throughout the entire experience. You make the player feel weak in survival horror games. That's how you basically
or at least vulnerable.
Or vulnerable.
Vulnerable and in jeopardy.
Well, that's where the resource management comes in. And that's
right,
where
that was,
you know,
part of it. Definitely.
And that's why, I mean, when The Walking Dead FPS was announced, I groaned inwardly, because I would like to see a open world, almost like GTA sandbox style Walking Dead game, where it is, I mean, and this is where Last of Us is very, very attractive to me, with, you know, that post-apocalyptic, even though it's going to be heavily, heavily story driven and we don't really know too many details. But I would love to have, you know, right, it's the zombie.
So what about
DayZ? Yeah, I mean, we'll see what comes of that. I'm looking. Yeah, when it comes out, it comes out. And I mean, I haven't played the mod because I don't have armor. Mm. But I mean, when it comes out, yes, I'd love to see it. But I'm thinking like a third person. Yeah, you could even put some parkour-y type elements. But I'm thinking almost like you hunt. You know, if you find a car, you know, you can either, you know, try and drive it as far as you can, or empty, you know, empty out the gas tank to go in and store some stuff, or you go searching for food, or you go searching for any other resource. And then all of a sudden, you know, you put a multiplayer co-op component into that where you can interact with other people who are off doing their own thing with their own little stores, and you band together.
Isn't there a game like this right now? Isn't there DayZ?
DayZ, that's why I read.
Yeah, but the community aspects are sort of
different.
They're building those.
And I think
DayZ is more of a shooter as well, like an out and out shooter.
No, not at all.
I said corrected.
Yeah, DayZ. So keep in mind, it builds off of the Arma engine,
yeah,
which is a highly advanced technical engine that gives them a large space to work in.
And they started off as a mod, and now it's becoming a full game.
Right. It started off as a mod, and now they're going to do a standalone version, which needs to happen because the mod installation with Steam. There were some people who had ran into trouble with it. It really wasn't that very difficult to install. But look, even I'm lazy enough that I was like, I'm going to wait for the single version. But basically what it comes down to is a social experiment where you're dropped into this world. There are other people on this server. So it's a la Minecraft where there's a shard that's running and you're dropped into the server. There are zombies everywhere. Marcus, good luck, survive. And you have a flashlight, and you have some bandages.
And you can find shit, and then there's people that are preying on you and will snipe you. And it's permadeath, right?
It's permadeath, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and that's one of those social components. There's I can't remember where I saw the write-up, but somebody who was playing it basically did this big write-up about how they went into the world, and you dropped in naked, no weapons, no equipment, whatever.
Exposed.
And he basically was almost immediately confronted by a group of other players who had banded together. And
that's the social experiment part.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
And they were basically like, all right, you're our hostage now. So rather than the guy could have been like, fuck you, and then they would have shot him, and that would have been game over. But he's like, okay, I'll play
along. In many of those cases, they will still fuck you at the end of it anyway.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They'll take your shit and then screw you.
So these are real people, and they're like, okay, so we're going to scout out this area. Okay, new guy, go over there. Like,
if anything pumps out and
attacks you. And it sounded like, you know, if he had continued to do what they wanted him to do, eventually they would give him a gun and like, okay, you're part of the group now. And like that kind of stuff is super exciting to me.
And but if you wanted to be a real dick.
Yeah, basically, right?
If you want to be a real dick at that point, then you could have taken your gun and like capped the leader at some point and been like, ah, bitches, you screwed my first 2 hours of the game.
But
and
that sort of stuff happens.
Or like, right. here's a gun with one bullet. Go check out that house over there, right? You know, like,
yeah.
So is that what you want?
That sounds really cool. I mean, I do like the and I'm going to try it when it comes out. I do have this idea in my head of like almost, like I said, this big GTA type experience where it is, you know, even without the multiplayer, you've got this huge world, mm-hmm. and you will interact with it, you know, with NPCs or whatever, and you can band together and you can build your resources.
The one I haven't seen is there's also a World War Z game coming, right?
Yeah, I know very little about
it. I haven't seen anything on it. So I think that
based on the Brad Pitt movie and the book?
The book, yes. The Brad Pitt movie, who knows how that's going to turn out.
It's actually World War Z, not World War Z.
Yeah, that trailer looks absolutely woeful. Who knew zombies could climb like worker ants?
Well, they just run up over each other. Oh, you're looking at, oh, you look so sad.
It's just
back to your original piece, though, because we got sidetracked from Resident Evil, which was we were talking about how Resident Evil 5 and 6 really are co-op, and which is actually a pretty weirdly ballsy move to make a game that is a single-player horror, like survival horror experience, and turn it into a co-op action-adventure shooter game. That's really like a weird turn, especially coming from a Japanese company. And then your point about like, let's go back and reboot it. I like that idea. I like the idea of like not just go back to the mansion, but let's go back to the mansion and with reference to what has come before, come at it from a different standpoint.
Now, how would you guys feel about the like Tomb Raider-ish? Like, here is as real of a take on the Resident Evil canon as we can possibly make. Or do you want all the wacky fucking crazy BS?
I still want it to be Resident Evil. I still want to be Resident Evil.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I see your point. Like, you could have it be more realistic. You're only going to find a clip of ammo somewhere, and then still have like over the top, you know, oh, it's a virus and it's an evil corporation and there's giant monsters. Just more of that kind of like
right, more of a
game.
Slow burn and like you confront one zombie early on and you're like, oh my god,
yeah, one zombie's hard or two or three zombies, and then you get into a room with six zombies, you're like, oh shit, I am fucked.
Right.
All right. Well, it's gonna be also interesting to see what comes of Last of Us next year and its fungus infected. Not zombie humans.
That might be the
athlete's
Resident
foot
Evil
gone
game
wild.
Athlete's foot gone wild.
Athlete's
all right,
face.
Folks. We are closing in on the end of this episode. We will be right back on the other side of this for the final segment of this Weekend Confirmed. Legendary Stevie Ray Vaughan cranking out the guitar for Mr. Bowie on that one. Always one of my favorites. Okay, so one more genre that I wanted to get into because Marcus and I had this conversation over social media. We kind of started it earlier in this week, so I said, all right, let's save this for the show, which is we both saw Skyfall, which we loved, and we thought about get your aunt out of here. What is with you in the poopy pants?
Can we just turn this mic off?
We all saw Skyfall here.
Have you seen it too?
Yeah,
all four
I saw it too.
Skyfall.
And I don't think I'm as down on it as James is, but I'm kind of in the middle camp, too.
I'm like, it's good. It's, you know, somewhere in the middle of the Bond movies.
Man, I loved it. I really, really loved it. I just thought that especially the way they, first of all, on top of everything else, the way that at the end of it, they've set it up to go into the next.
You know what? I'm
Bond
excited
movies.
About that because, like, I in some ways, making anti-Bond movies is kind of gotten – I'm sort of bored after three anti-Bond movies. I'm like, where is a real traditional Bond movie? And they
What's
do change
a lot. What's
your
definition of a traditional Bond movie? Please explain to me so I can cut you to shreds verbally.
The traditional Bond movie from – and like I said, now if you go back to from
I'll
Russia with Love and you go back to some of those other things, like yes, these probably fall in somewhere closer, like the last three. But I mean like you want Bond to have like a mission and you want him to have to go through various stages and you want him to use some cool gadgets and have awesome vehicles and have some exciting action sequences and get the girl. And I'm not saying it has to do that exactly. But what I am saying is that there were certain things that they – we're trying so hard to avoid. I think they sometimes threw the weed out with the chaff a little bit.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Okay, so let's just get this out there. I mean, the Bond movies, the gadgets were something the Bond franchise became reliant on in the late 60s and the 70s, the Roger Moore era in particular.
Sure.
And then they were, you know...
That went
to the end
the
of the
70s and 80s.
Yeah, but well, and then into the Pierce Brosnan, era as well. I mean, there were some dumb, stupid, bloody things. I mean, Die Another Day.
You left out Timothy Dalton.
Oh yeah.
No, and but that's the thing I will say about the Dalton ones. They actually went back to less gadget. There were some cheesy gadgets, but. And this is from somebody who has read all of Ian Fleming's books.
Sure.
And if you read the books. The Bond of Roger Moore's time and, to a certain degree, Pierce Brosnan's time doesn't exist. Okay. Bond is an alcoholic. He's a loner. He's a misogynist. He is basically an asshole, and you know he has no compunction with killing. And what I liked about Skyfall is, you know, they took it back to this a gun and a radio. And yes, we know there will be some gadgets and there are, you know, I'm not going to spoil the film because I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen it. Go out and see it, especially this weekend because Twice shites out. But there are things that they've done that are obviously nods to the past and talking about, you know, how to move forward. This feels just like Casino Royale felt like a new era for Bond and a, you know, and is 007 and James Bond a code name or whatever? That's actually, that myth is kind of put to rest in this movie, which is cool. But it feels like a reboot, you know, that was the reboot, that was the new Bond, the gritty one. He was kind of green. Then we had Quantum of Solace, which, really liked that. I liked that film. I was one of the few who I think really enjoyed
it. I liked that more than most people did too. And I don't mind the small stakes. I don't mind there not being a lot of gadgets and some of those other things. Like, don't get me wrong. And I actually like a lot of things. And I said this before the show. This movie to me is less than the sum of its parts. Like, the parts, there's fantastic acting, fantastic characters, great location scouting, great fights. The opening sequence is terrific. But in the end, I mean, the villain, fantastic. And I think one of the ways you've been able to rate Bond movies over the years is how good the villain is.
The performance was fantastic, yep. but I think the ultimate payoff of it's a tribute to how strong his performance was, because his that character's end goal was it was a revenge story, right? And it wasn't really that well developed of a revenge story. It was just like, yeah, you fucked me over when I was, you know, used to work for you, and now it's a disgruntled employee.
It's actually a perfectly valid and plausible revenge story if you think about it. Because yeah, I mean, and again, we can't give away what the bad guy's ethos is behind it, but right. When you hear the stuff as it starts to come out, you see it's, not everybody, and it's not black and white. There are so many shades of gray.
And it does add a bunch of other dimensions to the characters that you maybe hadn't gotten from other Bond films.
I would say that this is, I just want to finish this one point. One, I think this is probably the most personal we see Bond out of any section, but I think it's also the first time we see M. With an idea of what that character has to go through.
Right.
It's akin to the last 5 minutes of On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. I was going to bring that
up. And that's why it's personal, and that's why it's interesting. And what was great about this is that up until this point with Craig, you had the two movies, and they were completely intertwined. They were all about the quantum storyline. Mm-hmm. They were and there was, to me, almost a lingering question of – well, that was a great story arc. It was a powerful story arc that really projected that powerful bond into this situation. But can he do something else? I mean, can we go back to Bond? Can we get to a Bond? And we had to have a bridge. It would not have been as powerful if we had just gone right to a new international espionage story, if you want that story.
Sure.
Because by setting this up the way they did, they really gave him such personality.
Yeah, and I'll agree with that. I think the biggest problem for it to me is the stakes in this movie feel very low. Mm-hmm. You're kind of like, okay, like, I don't know, I was a little bored through the middle of it. Kind of like, all right, let's go. Like, I get it, and I enjoy it.
You really need to play Black Ops 2, I think.
I see all the reasons to like it. Maybe you should watch that Statham movie
where they like take the guy's heart out. And
I don't dislike.
Yes, yeah, so you should watch Crank. There you go. That'll keep you going.
Crank 2, High Voltage.
I don't dislike the movie. I thought it was a good movie. I think when you go into it hearing best Bond ever or best Bond in 40
best Bond
years,
is like people
like I don't know.
So let's talk about games because we're a games podcast anyway.
Let me just finish off.
Sure.
Craig is signed for two more Bond films and then he's out. And I think what Sam Mendes has done is he set these up to be, almost this could be the start of his final trilogy. Originally, the Quantum and Casino Royale was parts one and two of a trilogy, and there was supposed to be a third that Skyfall was supposed to be originally, culminating. But then there was this four year gap between them because of the rights issues. And I think that the next two, we will see Craig and his Bond evolve before they hand over to the new guy who I think is going to be Tom Hardy.
Interesting.
Even though he's just announced to play Sam Fisher today.
Okay, so there have been numerous attempts unsuccessfully to capture at least the love that there was for GoldenEye on 64. There have definitely been some good Bond games, especially for Bond fans such as Marcus and I seem to be. Mm-hmm. And we talked about these earlier. There's little disagreement, I think, over Everything or Nothing being the pretty much standout amongst the post-GoldenEye console games.
I would actually argue that feels more perhaps of a Bond game than perhaps GoldenEye did.
Oh, I would definitely.
Because of, the involvement of the vehicles and, the more characters, whereas obviously GoldenEye was more based on the movie. And I will say that, not only do I have all the Fleming books, I have a You Only Live Twice New York subway poster.
Wow.
From the mid-60s.
It had never been framed,
never been mounted, so it's canvas, and I had it mounted, and it cost me $1,000, and it's now worth like $4,000 or $5,000. Cause it's
legendary for
only
Connery coming back for the payday.
Yeah, it's actually one of the few that doesn't have the gum on the back from where they put it up in the subway.
Wow. So Everything or Nothing was very cool. Interestingly, I wish it had gone. It was developed by Redwood Shores, and it was unfortunate that it didn't get carried farther forward because it was the one that had the Bond moments in it. Yep. And the Bond moments were were a they were really they were going out on a limb to do that in a game. They were really a, you know, an interesting creative attempt to do something, and they weren't something we were probably going to get right the first time. And I've always felt like, wow, it was such a shame that that didn't ever go back and get explored again.
Yeah, I mean, that felt like a Brosnan movie. It had the voices and everything, and it had a lot of the points, perhaps the beats that you like. I mean, it had the cars, it had the action sequences, it had the gadgets, it had the things
that work, especially when you just boil it down to a video game. Like, I certainly want my Bond. Like, I love Casino Royale. I want my Bond to not necessarily just be, you know, mindless. Like, I appreciate the deep story, and I like GoldenEye for some of the same reasons as the revenge story there. But no, like, when you boil a video game, what you want is over the top, die another day, like Bond shooting shit. Bond.
I don't
doing
know that
spy
I necessarily
stuff.
Want that.
But I want. But what I'm saying is, you're not going to have, like, maybe not Bond killing an entire army on his own, but at the same point, you're focused on Bond being a spy and Bond doing things versus, say, you know, like, you couldn't make this last movie into a game very easily without adding a ton of
Telltale
shit.
Telltale could.
Okay. Telltale well, could, right? But not.
You know. Well, you know who I think could make a great Bond game. The Assassin's Creed 3 team.
I would say that.
Because, you know, you look at that and you look at not tying it to a movie. I mean, because that's always the kiss of death. But there is enough, you know, with a good writer and somebody who works with, you know, the studio and gets Daniel Craig involved or whatever. And you're looking at this 30 or 40 hour game potentially where, you know, you are globetrotting. You are fighting, and
that's the thing,
like,
is you have to have the environment. That is one thing. Yeah. It has to have that global, like, oh
and
my
the
gosh,
tech is there now. The tech, especially for the next gen.
Oh yeah,
the tech is so there to be able to do these things and access them.
It's also interesting that you brought up the idea of the writer being important. So we all agreed on Everything or Nothing. I think, and I think I talked about it a couple of years ago on this show, I loved Bloodstone. I mean, it's not a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. It was Bizarre Creations' swan song. They did it on the Club Engine, but it was a really fun Bond game. It made you feel like Bond. It had the idea of going to lots of different places. It did the idea of being a spy. There was definitely places there was, for instance, there were great parts where you were inside environments and able to not just gun people down as you would a la GoldenEye, but move between cover and sneak around and get through flanks and have opportunities to be Bond-like. Both of those games, Everything or Nothing, which we loved, and Bloodstone, which I liked, were written by Bruce Feinstein, who has also been worked on the screenplays for GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and The World Is Not Enough. So,
well, we won't
hold it against him.
We won't hold those against him.
But what I'm saying is that he's been intimately involved in the production of the movies, and so getting him on board to work on these games, yeah, naturally that DNA is just sort of imprinted and works very well there.
You just said Assassin's Creed 3, and while you're talking about that, like, what about like if Arkane made like a Dishonored style game and that kind of
that would be rad.
That
would be cool.
Like, yeah. And infiltrate a facility with those kind of options and where your gadgets are.
How about
your
the
powers
Deus Ex Human Revolution
those
team?
Guys would be great too. I think.
What
about the Arkham City team? Like, there are folks out there who could make a phenomenal Bond game. And you're right. I think part of the problem in prior generations has been that the tech wasn't there to do more than make it one dimensional. Like, oh, we're going to add a gadget, which is like a laser watch. So now we have to use the laser watch. Or we're going to make driving sequence. So we have to do a driving sequence with a car, because you were investing so much just to develop the tech around that one level section that you had to do that. Whereas now in open world games, we're able to inject all sorts of mechanics because of the fidelity of the engines.
It could be kind of cool, actually, in an open world Bond game to have a car chase that just plays out over the course of the city, you know, like
GTA.
And if you were, right, well,
I mean,
and
Rockstar,
to a certain level,
you know,
taking that to the next level. Like,
and with GPS, we can like give you some points where we're going to funnel you through.
Yeah.
Funnel you through and or like just set up the game now to dynamically create. Like, if you want the big moment with the tanker truck, like, it doesn't matter where you are because now we can set that up to happen where you're about to be.
That's
and
cool.
Have the, like, you could script, you could have this chase is going to have four big moments, but it doesn't matter where the chase goes or the chase is different every time. Like, you could do some cool stuff there, actually.
Yeah, and you've got the option of, you know, do you do that chase in a car or do you grab a motorcycle? Or, you know, I mean, again, I look at the GTA 5 trailer from this week and what they're doing with that whole huge stretch of the West Coast. And I think, you know, why can't there be a Bond game that does that? I mean, you know, Max Payne, the last Max Payne, had its detractors. I only got to start playing it a couple of weeks ago. But I could see, again, that sort of element really coming to the fore.
And I have that on the shelf at home. I really kind of want to play it.
You really should. I really liked it.
I would say that it basically goes to show that the people who are the guardians of the franchise right now in the video game world, just like their predecessors in EA for most of the time, now we're talking Activision, are being wholly negligent. It's obviously just a cash cow because they keep on rehashing the same idea over and over again. Let's take one of the movies. Let's take some of the bad guys from the movies and put them all in together.
Are you talking about Legends now?
Legends, whatever pile of shit they released last year.
How many Bond games now have tried to reboot other movies and shove them in?
There was the From Russia with Love. There were a number of those bad ones.
We don't want. Give us a new Bond. And, you know, there'll be 3 years before the next Bond.
So on that same wavelength, I don't know if you guys – do you guys recall Nightfire?
Yeah.
So
I do remember it. I remember.
Nightfire was good, especially if you played the PC version, which was done by Gearbox, interestingly enough, and had a little bit of a different development, even had completely different levels than the console version. But what that game taught me was that though everybody loves GoldenEye on 64, that it was a right game, right place, right time. Yeah. And what I really want out of a Bond game isn't – because Nightfire hits the GoldenEye notes. It is a great shooter. And at least on PC, it's a really good shooter. It's a great shooter interpretation of a Bond game. And it reminded me that, what I really want was afterwards when Everything or Nothing and Bloodstone came out, that's going down the direction I want.
Well, look at GoldenEye Reloaded last year.
Yeah, same thing.
Which came out and it didn't...
It was... I don't know if it was nostalgia clouding my view. I thought it was... And I played it on Wii. I thought it was pretty good. You know, again, I think nostalgia may have clouded it, and maybe because the Wii controller is a more interesting way to play a shooter. If I played with a regular controller, it's probably not as interesting. But I do think, like you said, it was the right place, right time. It was a first-person shooter. It had four-player multiplayer. You had four controllers. You could do it split-screen. It was Halo. It was Halo's LAN 16-player games before that existed, and that was the way people who had started playing Doom and other things who didn't have a PC or didn't get a bunch of people with PCs together actually could play a first-person shooter.
Well, the platform probably contributed a lot to its success as well, right? Because there weren't that many options shooter-wise.
Well, I know in the UK, it shipped, the N64 shipped with GoldenEye.
Yeah.
It was the GoldenEye pack.
So they do a lot of
Mario
bundling
pack
in the UK. That's cool.
Yeah. So let me throw this out there. Who owns the Bond franchise? Well, it's the Broccolis and, Sony. And Sony have a new console coming out. And if Sony own this entire, this entire pantheon of Bond stuff, I would buy a PS4 if they had, they went to somebody like, Insomniac and said, make a Bond film. Naughty Dog, make a Bond film. Make a Bond game. Take the Last of Us engine or the next generation of that. Turn that into a Bond game. 20 to 25 hours, some side quests, some really good voice acting. And that's our franchise that is only coming out on the PS4. Screw you, Nintendo and Microsoft. Boom. They control that entire thing. And that, to me, executed correctly by a top-shelf development team who are involved in everything. Let's face it, Sony can give them the access to all the production stuff and the voiceovers. And it's taken out of the grubby hands of, Mr. Kotick. Then we're looking at potentially a great.
I think that's
Bond
a bit of a
game.
Fantasy, but
it's a total fantasy.
Yeah, it requires a different parts of Sony to climb out of their silos. But
it depends. It totally depends on Sony, getting a quarter to get a map to go to the Clue Bus.
Well, and I think the platform exclusive wise, it's so hard to do something like that and be profitable. I mean, you don't cut kneecap yourself. Because, the project scope gets really, really big, right? And it gets bigger. You could make it bigger if you were going to sell it to three different audiences.
It could be as big as Uncharted.
Well,
you get a little bit of a benefit because when you're exclusive published, you can refinance some of the fees.
Exactly.
That normally
you don't pay as much
to the platform holders when you're a third party. So, and it's a showcase. So, there's probably some money. Like, again, Uncharted, it could be, you figure Uncharted level or a Naughty Dog level developer could make something.
But that's like super high quality. We're talking about like a rock star type production, right? Where it's a big open world,
Like you said, even if it's like, say, Last of Us engine, and who knows? Like, you could make a good game.
That's not coming to 360.
No, that's true. That's true.
And it is a big franchise.
As long as we're bringing up old memories, do you guys remember where you were 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
Yes.
Today, what is November 15th? Yeah, I know.
You do? Were you playing Mech Assault, NFL Fever, or Ghost Recon on your brand new Xbox Live? 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I think I actually was playing. Well, no, I probably already finished Ratchet and Clank, which came out a little over 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Yeah, I remember Mech Assault. And
does it really feel like a decade?
Yeah,
it kind of does. I mean, yeah, I was in college, so
I'm ready for some new tech, if that's what you're asking.
I will. Well, so
it's the birthday, isn't it?
Yeah, the that's what I say. It's the 10th year anniversary. If you guys haven't been watching, Major Nelson was giving away some stuff yesterday.
Well, it's the 10-year anniversary of Xbox Live, it's the not the Xbox.
Yeah. Right, no, 10-year anniversary of Live.
Right.
Yeah. Which I don't think that at the time anyone would have said. So at the time, you were in the thick of Xbox PS2, and everyone was caught up on whether or not Xbox was even going to be able to lure the multi-platform games to themselves. Look how that's changed.
Yeah. Well, at the time, EA wasn't doing them, right? That was
they were
thing.
they were dipping their toes in the pool.
Right.
But you had, of course, you had NFL Fever. So then look at this lineup. You have NFL Fever. I think that Microsoft made maybe one more NFL Fever game. Did they do more than one?
Don't ask me. I don't play American football.
No, maybe two. They might have done a second. If they did any, it was a second.
Yeah. And you had Ghost Recon, which rose to great prominence, but then like Red Storm struggled. Like Red Storm just sort of unfurled, and who knows what's...
Red Storm got shot.
Mech Assault was awesome.
Mech Assault was huge. It was so fun.
Xbox Game of the Year that year, and I think to this day you go buy a Platinum Edition copy, and it's my Xbox Game of the Year award on the front of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome. Where was that for?
Cinescape Magazine back in the day. So yeah.
That nice. Was, well I done, James Stevenson.
Yeah. That was Mech. I love the shit out of Mech Assault. I love the shit out of Mech games. That is a type of game that needs to come back.
Mech Warrior Online, and Hawken.
Yeah. I know.
Hawken, come back a couple of weeks.
Yeah. No, I know. Hawken looks great. And come back on consoles, though. And the thing about Mech Assault was it had a very... It still felt like a mech game, but it didn't feel like a PC mech game. But it didn't feel like a first-person shooter turned into a mech first-person shooter, which was cool. Anyway, I don't know. It was just kind of cool to think back 10 years ago. I was in the beta, too. So you got like the little white box in the mail, which was hilarious. You got this white box in the mail with a CD and a headset. And you're like, oh, I'm so cool, man. Check it out.
I got to say, I mean, it's nice that with Microsoft to celebrate the anniversary. I feel sorry for people in Europe, whereas here in the U.S., if you've been up for online for 10 years, you're going to get, the limited edition 360. In Europe, you get Racketeer for free.
We got Racketeer for free. Actually, today, Friday, is the last day. So if you have a Kinect, you should go grab that for free. It was only a 2-day deal.
But I mean, that's all they got in Europe, and over here, everybody's getting.
And you'll like it.
No.
All right, folks. Here we go with, as we always do, wrapping it up with our finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Yeah, Jindy. Indy Jeff Mattis.
Yes.
Kick us off.
Okay. So my finishing move, I want to give a little iOS love to a... It's actually a game that came out several weeks ago called The Room. And it's a puzzle game, really high fidelity graphics. It's kind of like... sort of feels like a Myst-ish sort of game. So it's like photorealistic. You manipulate the puzzles actually by, swiping and turning things around and actually interacting with 3D space. The puzzles are really, really clever. It looks great. If you're in the market for a puzzle game, I think it's $5. It's a little on the pricey side, but really,
you just called $5 on the pricey side.
Well, for an iOS game, yeah.
I know. I'm just pointing.
I know. Yeah. Okay. If you got $5 and you want a puzzle game, it's really good. The Room.
Excellent, James Stevenson.
Happy Thanksgiving in advance. And right after your Thanksgiving break, we're shipping Ratchet & Clank Full Frontal Assault on PlayStation 3 on November 27th.
Congrats. Excellent.
It's fun. It is a lot of fun. We've been playing a shit ton of the competitive around the office, and we are super, super competitive against each other on it. And for $19.99, you get it on your PlayStation 3. You can also download it on your Vita for that same price. You can...
One price, $19.99.
Yay!
No way.
This is a total plug and shill right now. And cross save, cross play, all that good stuff. So go check it out. It's not going to break the bank to buy a $20 game. And if you have a PlayStation 3 and you like Ratchet,
because he thinks $5 is expensive.
Jeff's like, that's
like four times.
Four copies of The Room.
Yeah. Holy shit.
$21 games. That's 20 Angry Birds Star Wars.
It is, unless you're playing on an iPad.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. No universal apps there.
It's $3.
Marcus Beer.
I am going to give a shout out to Movember, which is the annual
celebration of guys growing stupid-ass mustaches for men's health charities. So it's prostate cancer research, testicular cancer, encouraging guys to go and get health checks. That's why I have a dead rat under my nose right now. I mean, I am rocking borderline porno star slash pedophile.
Nothing borderline about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got this thing under my nose, and I'm doing it for a good cause. So if I could say to people, go to annoyedgamer.com, which is my site, and there is a link there to all my Movember stuff to sponsor me, because I'm at like $800 right now. Which
let's get Marcus over 1,000.
That would be fantastic. So yeah, it's really, really good cause. I mean, obviously breast cancer awareness gets a lot of deserved love, you know, during its month. But I mean, men, you know, a lot of men, you know, just even in this room are so likely to suffer from prostate cancer in particular.
My dad. So I'm really glad you're supporting it. I've already devoted it to a couple of Movember outlets because my dad had prostate cancer and it's very treatable, but it's treatable because there's been a number, great deal of research around it. And it's sort of like breast
detection.
Cancer.
Yeah. Make sure
it's very similar.
Yeah. Once you get to, especially when you get to a certain age, I mean, once you're into your 30s, go and get an annual checkup. I mean, it's something I do. And yeah, while it's, you know, not exactly glamorous to have the doctor stick his finger up your bum, if it saves your life, I'll take one.
There you go. We will have the link to Annoyed Gamer and to Marcus's Movember page in the show notes on the Shack, of course. And I will finish this up with a quick note, as you guys are often want to get on us for not supporting the Vita. How can you not support the Vita with the PlayStation Plus, which launches finally for Vita on Monday with a ridiculously awesome deal? I mean, so basically, if you have your PS3 and you're already signed up, you're good to go. It's like $50 a year for PlayStation
Plus.
Yeah,
$50 a year, or like a little bit more expensive per month if you do it on a 1 or 3 month basis.
Yeah, and they've already been banging down some crazy, obviously already a great, you know, gaming value for your buck.
The Instant Gaming Collection, like
right now this month they've added Quantum Conundrum. So you got Airtight Games, Kim Swift's new puzzle game in there. That's pretty cool. But this lineup that they're launching, that they're rolling out for Vita, is really quite impressive. You would get for free Wipeout 2042, Uncharted Golden Abyss, Jet Set Radio, Final Fantasy Tactics, The War of the Lions, and Tales from Space, Mutant Blobs Attack.
It's pretty much all the good games on the system in one go.
Yeah. So I would say this. While Sony doesn't have the, with all deference to my girlfriend's game, major blockbuster, crazy, oh my god, Halo 4, Call of Duty, Black Ops competitor in the space, they have put together a really nice package of games and entertainment around their hardware for the fall.
Yeah, and I think if you're that person who doesn't have a PS3 and wants to catch up, like, I mean, you know, there's great Black Friday deals on a PS3. Yeah. Go pick that up. Buy a PlayStation Plus subscription. I think most of the Black Friday deals come with a PlayStation Plus subscription.
Oh, do they?
There's a ton
of
games.
Smart.
I think there's some that do. There's a ton of games for download, and you can also download just to show one more game. Ratchet & Clank All for One is in your free Instant Game Collection. So
just stay away from Black Ops Declassified on the Vita. It
I hear it's terrible.
Stank. Well, it's taint. Yeah, it's gaming taint.
29 on Metacritic.
What?
29.
Like, I didn't want to talk about it because all I've been hearing is like all the rumors flying. Is it really only like an hour long?
Single player?
Well, there's not actually a campaign, I guess. So it's like there's like spec ops and like some challenge stuff, and then it's mainly competitive mode though.
Wow, what a mess.
Yeah. What a mess.
Can you smell cash?
So it's people saying it's an hour long. It's not really fair to it because there's not an actual sort of straight through.
So it's not less than an
hour.
There's
not an actual game there.
Here's some money. Please make us a Call of Duty game for Vita.
If you're addicted to competitive Call of Duty, being able to take Wi-Fi and play competitive Call of Duty on a handheld is pretty cool, though.
It's basically what Bobby Kotick's been trying to do for years. Do away with single player and just milk the multiplayer experience.
All right. Well, we've milked this thing for 2 hours. Thanks very much for keeping up with us. If you're not sticking around for the quick NFL tailgate at the end of the show, then thanks very much, of course, to our guest, James Stevenson.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you for having me, as always.
And Marcus Beer. We'll have links to Movember and Annoyed Gamer. You can keep up with him at Annoyed Gamer, and he's also on the television box.
I cover stuff for NBC4, and then I also have my own show on Game Trailers called Annoyed Gamer. And for my first time, this was very pleasurable. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. We would love to have you back. You are... Oh, that was very sweet. And Indie Jeff down there at the end, holding down the end of the table.
Yeah, I am. Holding it down.
I don't know what I was actually trying to think, holding down... I don't know what you're holding down. You're holding down something. All right, very much thanks to everybody. That's your Weekend Confirmed. We are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, Tanqueray.
I need a drink, Alizé.
I need a drink,
Jose.
I need a drink,
Champagne.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
I need a drink, Absolute.
I need a drink, Hypnotic.
I need a drink, Hennessy.
I need a drink.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to weekendconfirmed.hover.com and enter show code WEEKENDCONFIRMED. All right, guys, thanks for sticking with us. Football season, we're almost to the big Thanksgiving Day games. Hey, my Cowboys won last week.
Yeah,
well, what do you know? That was, and I was funny. I was listening to last week's show on Monday or Tuesday this week, and Jeff, you were so funny. You're like, yeah, we're just going to call that the shitstorm. And it kind of was, yeah. Wasn't it? It was, yeah. Kind of, even my, I can't claim any great fame out of winning that game. It was just a,
hey, but you won. That's something.
We won. Yeah. I don't have Dave's picks, so I have to email him. I will get them before game time. I do have Jeff Canada's and Andrea's, though. The last week, everybody went 2-1, except for Andrea, who went 1-2. So we're all locked up neck and neck, although Dave is out in front. Dave's out in front 18-11.
He's got a 3-game lead on Jeff.
Jeff and the Atlantis Group's engineer in second place, both at 15-14, and then 14-15 for the guest chair, which Marcus will be picking in today. You do understand this is football with a oblong thing that people put in their hands.
Damn, I was going to take Swansea City over Newcastle this weekend.
See, I knew. I knew I'd make sure. And then Andrea and James in 13-16, and I'm at 12-17.
Which all is right. A big recovery for
me. It is a big recovery for me. I had a horrendous beginning
of the
year.
You were like 0-9 to start, so you're like 12-8-1 since then. Like, it's pretty good.
I've been doing very well since then. It was a bad start. All right, so this week I got some good matchups for us that are traditional matchups, although the teams are in different places. So I'm going to start us off with the Packers at the Lions, Monsters of the Midway. It is the Packers -3.5 going into Detroit. What do you think, James Stevenson?
You know what? It's got to be Green Bay. Detroit's just been rough this year, and I like the Packers. I like the Packers to win and cover that spread for sure. I think they're going to have a big game.
All right. Indy Jeff Mattis.
I'm also on the Packers side, and that's mainly because I think they can, 3.5 points you said?
Yes.
Yeah, they can cover that.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Micah? He's with the cheese also. Would you like me to go before you, Marcus? We're going to go first.
No, I'm perfectly happy with cheese. I like cheese. They've got the funny hats, and I know it's cold up there, which reminds me of home, so I'm going with the Packers of Green Bay.
I'm going with the Lions. Ooh. Let me tell you why I'm going with the Lions.
Garnett's just trying to catch up now. He's like, everyone's going Packers. I got to go
Matt
the other
Stafford
way.
Has a ridiculously good QB win and rating against the Packers at home over the last 2 years. It is ridiculous. He's done great against them. They have the weapons to be matched up against them, and this is a rivalry. It's just like any other rivalry game. Like, both teams will put it all out there on the field, and Packers still don't have Greg Jennings. Still don't have Greg Jennings, and I'm not sure that they really have their running game nailed down where they want it, so I think this is wide open and winnable, and I think Detroit hangs in and maybe wins this one. And then another huge rivalry.
Jeff and Andrea
both on Green Bay. So yeah. I'm on an island.
You're on an island.
Unless Dave. I mean, we don't know what Del Rio could go. And he won't listen to this because he's off on his vacation. Right, so fine.
He's got more important things to do right now, let's be honest.
He's got to make his picks. He's in the lead. He's got to make his picks.
True. Yeah, otherwise he goes 0-3 on the weekend. So, he gets makeup picks, but
another big rivalry. Chargers and Broncos. Chargers have had a rough time of it, although rebounding. No, they didn't really rebound. Nah. Rivers looked okay, though. Chargers, though, going into New Mile High and getting 7.5 points. So Chargers on the road, getting 7.5 points going into Denver. I'm going to start with Micah. What do you think? Micah is taking the Broncos at home and giving the 7.5. What do you think, Jeff Mattis?
That's a pretty big spread.
7.5 is a big spread. It is a big spread.
And you're losing. You don't have home field. I got.
Why do you not have home field?
No. Broncos are home. The underdogs are home field.
Oh, okay, so
the favorites are home field. Up. Broncos are laying 7.5 at home.
I gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. You know what? I'm gonna go with Denver too.
Going with the Broncos. Marcus Beer?
Well, I do like a big spread. So, and I fucking hate San Diego. It's such a horrible town. Honestly, it's just like, it's like the hemorrhoid on California, isn't it? Let me say, yes, go Broncos, because I also think, the fact that you're playing at altitude always messes
Can.
You up.
Especially the seaside teams. Possible. I agree with that.
Good picks. I like Denver. I've learned my lesson about going against Denver and Peyton Manning at home. Denver is going to win. That at 7.5 points, they're just trying to entice you to take it, and I'm not going to fall for that trap. Denver wins big.
I'm going to fall for it.
You're going to go for it? You're going to take the bait?
I'm going to take the bait. I'm going to take the bait because...
It's 7.5, too. Well, 7.5 is a good number, though, because if you lose by a touchdown, they still win.
Right. So maybe I'll get a backdoor, whatever the hell it is.
Backdoor cover?
Yeah, maybe I get a backdoor cover.
You could. They could be down by 2 touchdowns, score a touchdown with 30 seconds left.
And then I can get a backdoor cover. I'm going to go for the Chargers because I liked that they were putting it back together a little bit. And this is, again, another rivalry game. Another rivalry game. Both teams will be up for it real big. And then finally, two teams that really don't like each other. The Baltimore Ravens going into it's not Riverside anymore. What is it? It's not Three Rivers anymore. It's New Three Rivers. It's
Heinz Field.
Heinz Field.
It's right by the river, but it's Heinz Field.
Going into Heinz Field to play Brian Leahy's favorite Pittsburgh Steelers. We should have Leahy on soon. I miss him. He's
that'd
a good
be
guy.
Good.
Yeah. So it's Baltimore -3.5 at Pittsburgh. And keep in mind, Roethlisberger is out for this game. There will be no Roethlisberger for this game.
Baltimore. Ravens. They cover easily. Without Roethlisberger, no problem there.
Well, they don't. Yeah, okay. All right.
I like it. I like Baltimore.
All right. So you're taking the Ravens?
Yep.
Marcus, who do you like?
I'm going with the Steelers. Two reasons. One, they have those dinky yellow towels that I think are really cool. And two, I'm a big fan of Heinz baked beans.
Yellow and black. Black and yellow. Whichever it is. It's black and yellow, isn't it? Black and yellow. I'm a Cowboys fan. I can't like the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Ravens because of that missing important player. Yeah.
All right. Okay, fine. Also with the Ravens. I'm taking the Steelers.
All right.
I'm going to be 0-3 this freaking week, aren't I?
Maybe. But hey.
I'm taking the Steelers, and here's why I'm taking the Steelers. I'm taking the Steelers because they have a beast of shared backfield, but the Ravens haven't been able to stop anyone. And I think that Dwyer could get out. He's got some chops to get out there and get on them. And, you know, like all they got to do is get a little running game going. They're at home. They get a little momentum behind them, a little maybe bad weather, you know, if there's any weather, cold. I like the Steelers in this. By the way, to catch you up, though, we'll get Jeff took the Broncos. Andrea was with me on the Chargers, so at least I'm not completely on an island on that one. And Jeff took the Baltimore Ravens, and Andrea's with me on the Steelers. So either Andrea and I will be completely commiserating on our horrible choices, and she'll be 1-2, and I'll be 0-3, or
you could both be 3-0.
I could be 3-0, and she could be 2-1. Yeah, exactly. All right, folks. Thanks very much for sticking with us. We'll be back next week. We're going to do our holiday edition a little early. It'll be a lot of fun. Ariel and Seth Killian will be here next week.
Oh, nice. A little All-Stars action.
You definitely need to get the booze in if Killian's here.
Yeah.
You could tell him I said that.
He'll be able to hear it.
He'll hear it.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.